Welcome to Prince Watch, the all-inclusive podcast for the upcoming Half-Blood Prince film. My name's Aaron, also known as Arrow Grotter on the Chamber of Secrets forums.
Hey, this is Scott, also known as LCBaseball22 on the forums.
I'm Britt, also known as HouseL25 on the COS forums.
I'm Vince, also known as Master of Death on the Chamber of Secrets forums.
I'm Dylan, also known as BML1991 on the COS forums.
Hi, I'm Rachel, also known as Rachie Z on the COS forums and Leaky forums.
This podcast contains spoilers about the upcoming film. If you wish not to be spoiled, please do not listen. Welcome back to Prince Watch, and this episode we've got lots of news concerning the trailer and the poster that was supposed to come out, but instead we've got a different trailer, the Japanese one with that weird voiceover and those weird subtitles. We're going to be discussing that a bit later. And then we've also got a small a number that showed up on IMDb, which was the apparent runtime for Half-Blood Prince, and we're going to discuss that. And then we move on for four chapters for the list. We're going to be discussing four chapters from the climax of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. The Seer Overheard, The Cave, The Lightning Struck Tower, and The Flight of the Prince. And then we're going to be continuing our discussion point segment and discussing the climax as a whole. So that's what we've got in this episode. What we don't have in this episode is a mail segment. What we asked last week is people to send in some mail. We didn't really get enough for this episode, but we'd like to have enough for next episode. So send that in to princewatch@gmail.com if you have a question you want answered.
Please, so, we want some mail. We're lonely here.
Yeah. Now we're going to move over to the news, and we're going to have our original news anchor this time, Britt, for the first time in a while, so.
What's in the news, Britt?
Alright.
Yes.
Well, Portkey, which is the Italian fan site, right?
Yay, Italian.
reported that a trailer would be shown with the film Inkheart on January 24th. The Google translation of the site read the last full trailer, confusing us on whether the trailer was the one released in November or a completely new one. Portkey also mentioned that a poster is likely to be released on January 30th.
But it won't.
Pottermania acquired screen caps of an apparent new trailer shown in Japan. It was rumored then that this was the trailer to come with Inkheart in the U.S. on that Friday. Okrim, the webmaster of Portkey, stated that the trailer, described as V3, was going to show with Inkheart, was the one released in November with Twilight. MuggleNet reported that some cinemas had the November Half-Blood Prince trailer separate to the Inkheart, but there, on some of the prints, a trailer was part of them. It was rumored that on these connected prints that there was a new Half-Blood Prince trailer, probably the Japanese trailer that held so much mystery. On IMDb, a user said that a new trailer was attached to Inkheart at their theater with a runtime of 2 minutes 50 seconds. Okrim posted on Chamber of Secrets saying the poster had been delayed. The Japanese trailer finally made its way online a week after its TV appearance, and it was apparent that this wasn't really a trailer but more of a television special. Portkey stated that the V3 trailer would also be attached to He's Just Not That Into You. HPANA apparently had word from WB that it was the Japanese trailer that was appearing with Inkheart, and He's Just Not That Into You, but probably misread Portkey, which stated that it was the November trailer that would be attached to these films. HPANA then updated again with word that WB had stated that the Japanese trailer was for Japanese release only, and there were no plans for it to be released elsewhere. No poster was released on the 30th of January. Basically, it kind of sucked for us.
Yeah, that was a very confusing
week.
the first week. Because everyone got confused with this Port Key first saying that this V3 trailer was coming out, and also this Japanese trailer appeared, and everyone just kind of thought they'd be the same, but they really weren't. And, yeah, everyone got confused. And it was all mayhem, basically.
So we have loads of screen caps from that Japanese trailer TV special. You can see them on the Half-Blood Prince list on COS.
There wasn't a whole lot of, like, new stuff. There's a lot of new lines, though. There's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really loved some of this dialogue. Like,
but, I mean, a lot of it was seems we already saw just with new dialogue.
Yeah, I was really, when I saw the trailer, I was really kind of excited to see that things seemed more canon, I guess, than some of the previous films, at least to me. Like, Gambin seemed a lot more in character.
I love that. That line.
And Harry was like sarcastic.
Most people vomit. Yeah.
Take my arm. That was fun. Most people vomit the first time.
I think it helped him a lot I think it helped Gambin a lot to know that Dumbledore was gay, because it makes him a little bit more. It made him play him a little bit more eccentrically, which is how he is.
Yeah.
And I actually think that made all the difference. Like, I have a feeling that if he had known that earlier on, like, it may have made a difference in how he played him. There is a different, you know, he played him a lot more light. He wasn't lighthearted, it was just more.
Whimsical, right?
Whimsical. Yeah, well, which is, you know, I would hate to say it this way, but within the gay stereotype of, like, what, you know.
Yeah.
What you would think he was, I have a feeling it's made all the difference. So, but still not up to par with me, but he's much better than he was. So.
That's always good to know.
Yeah.
Well, from a Gambin basher like you, that says a lot.
Well, I also have a problem with his wardrobe people. I mean, that's part of what makes it not good. So, that's not all Gambin, you know, but in terms of what was Gambin, up to Gambin to solve, like, he seems to have done a much better job, so.
That's, yeah. That's good, because he has such a major role in this film, you know. It's essential that he gets it right this time, even though he didn't get it, you know, on the mark before. But this time is a little bit more essential for him.
Still no pictures of her, of Hermione all dressed up in her low-cut dress.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still waiting on that. Men are still waiting for that.
Yeah, I kind of thought they would show some. I mean, they showed enough scenes from the party. Oh, you can see her back there. I think that's her. Behind Harry's head, like in one of the screenshots.
Yeah,
you can't see
below the waist, right? Yeah.
You can only see, like, part of her profile. I think that's her. It may not be her, though.
I don't think that's her. That looks like someone else.
Yeah.
Hermione stunt double.
Anyway, so what's the next?
Wait, there's this new scene kind of thing that we learnt. It was
Slughorn.
Harry going to see Slughorn about the memory. Some great lines there.
You didn't bring Professor Slughorn back simply to teach potions, did you, sir?
No, I did not. I want you to get his true memory. Without it, we leave the fate of our world to chance.
Professor, you knew Voldemort. You were his teacher. What was he like?
Dumbledore put you up to this, didn't he?
Slughorn retorts about Dumbledore's telling Harry to do this.
I wonder when that is. I wonder if it's like right after the first Slug Club.
I think it's right after the, what's it, the fake memory.
Yeah, because Harry, there was like, you guys talked about it in like a couple podcasts ago where the, there's a shot of Ron and Harry, like, in the hallway, looking, then says they're waiting for Slughorn, that actually, he does go to see Slughorn about that memory, and, you know, just like in the
Rachel,
book,
where is that door with, like, the little window thing that opens up that Slughorn talks to him through?
Oh, yeah.
There's a part in the trailer that has a wooden door, and it reminds me of, like, in the first Lord of the Rings movie with the gatekeeper or whatever. When he asks for the password, there's, like, one of those little openings in the door that Slughorn pokes his head through. And what does he tell him, Aaron?
Why me?
What's the line during that?
I don't think that
just because I've been in New Zealand, I think I know everything.
Wait, I think I might know what you're talking about, but I'm not picturing.
I was wondering where that is. Is that in Hogwarts? I don't.
Wait, is he talking to Harry through it? Is he talking to Harry
through
it? Yeah. That might be when he's knocking on the door to get help for Ron.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'd never seen that door before, so we were wondering where that was. We didn't. We thought maybe it was his house in Budleigh Babberton, but.
That would make total sense. That I'm virtually certain he's looking through because he needs help for Ron. Harry is bringing Ron because of the love potion.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Oh, okay. You know, he knocks on the door, and Slughorn's reluctant to let him in. So yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
There's also a picture of Harry looking through a window. Do you see that? Like it's
yeah,
like
that's. That's got to be in the beginning of the movie, right, Rich?
The one that's selective is what he's looking at.
When he sees Dumbledore in the subway.
Yeah, like basically what happens is there's a train going past Harry at the moment. Like that's actually where you can see windows reflecting. That's a train. And then when the train clears, there's Dumbledore standing there in front of the magic, thing.
Oh, that's cool.
I love that sign. I mean, what you're talking about? Yeah, I love that sign. Divine magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. In case anyone needed any clarity about that.
Yeah, it looks like there's at least one other scene in the common room besides the one in the beginning of the movie with the potions book, right? There's several scenes? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember saying that there was only one scene in the common room or something, but...
No. There's several because when he... He talks them a lot in the common room. There's also the scene where he goes to hide where Ginny grabs the book from him, and there's another scene where Ginny goes in and says she's gonna hide the book, or Hermione tries to take it, and there's a lot of scenes in there. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're just like on a couch or something, and Hermione, he's talking to her, I guess, about trying to figure out how to get the memory from Slughorn, or whatever, and. She's like, do you honestly think you can just, walk right up to him and ask him to reveal his darkest secret? Which I guess is what he was planning to do.
Do you honestly expect you could just walk up and ask him to reveal his deepest, darkest secret?
Right.
But, I mean, in the book, you tried certain scheming ways, kind of like euphoria potions or whatever, to put him in a good mood and whatnot, but I guess they...
Not right away. Remember, first he tried to ask. So,
yeah, that's right. He did ask.
He did, and I remember, and Hermione got pissed. It was actually pretty close to the book, because Hermione was upset and said, well, if Ron tells you to go,
that's in the movie?
No, something similar is. I don't remember if that's exactly in it, but I think that's what that scene is that she. I have a feeling she gets pissed off about Ron in that, but I can't, sometimes the movie in the book confuses me, but I know that was similarly there, yeah.
Yeah, going back to, some of the lines, it was kind of weird hearing the lines from the script. Arthur.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Really? Not for me?
Especially you, Scott.
It's weird because,
you actually heard the movie first.
Times like these, dark times, they do funny things to people. They can tear them apart.
You read these lines for months and months, and you act them out, and you won't read them out loud, and then finally hear it.
For some reason, the Arthur lines sounded weird to me.
Well, it was kind of
I
talked over a little bit.
And we've also heard that the runtime for this film will be around 140 minutes, but we don't have any confirmation.
The runtime, just so for the record, runtime sounds about what I saw.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's 2 hours and 20 minutes without credits, though. Otherwise, it's only a couple minutes longer than Order of the Phoenix.
How do you think it's going to be? 2.5 hours of credits or something?
Huh? No. But credits are like 10 to 15 minutes, so that would make it only a few.
It doesn't include credits, though.
Oh, no, it doesn't? How do you know?
Yeah, I know. The test screen didn't include credits.
No, but the runtime should include credits.
It does on IMDb.
Oh, really? But how
it says Order the Phoenix was 2 minutes. It says Order the Phoenix was 2 hours 8 minutes. It's only like 2 hours and 3 minutes without credits.
Yeah, but
which
the
is crap for the longest book.
Anyway.
Well, that's it for the news. We will be back in 2 weeks. On to the list.
This podcast was created as a companion to our Heplet Prince list, which contains everything known about the film thus far. Each episode will discuss chapters from the book and how they translate to the film.
Chapter 25, The Seer Overheard. Emma Thompson is not returning as Trelawney. That's been confirmed by her because she's working on... that's for Deathly Hallows. She's working on different movie.
But she's just been written out the script for this one.
Yeah.
She's not in Deathly Hallows?
No. She's not returning for Trelawney's Deathly Hallows. I mean, I guess they could cast someone else, but anyways.
Oh, how sad. Okay.
She's probably in Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, she's working on her own movie, the Annie McPhee Diaries or something like that. Anyway, to fill this chapter a bit, we decided to add the end of the script from the previous chapter. I guess somebody forgot to add this in last episode. So would that be you, Aaron?
Sorry, yes. Yes.
It's the very end of the Horcrux scripts after Harry leaves Dumbledore's office. Scene 118, interior, exterior, gargoyle corridor, late day. Harry stands at a window looking out. He brings his fingers to his chest again when Hermione comes up behind him.
Harry, it's time.
Scene 119, interior, exterior, courtyard, moments later, late day. Harry, Hermione, and Ron walk.
Hermione, is the room of requirement impossible?
If one wants it to be, why?
It would explain why I thought Malfoy was leaving the castle when he disappeared off the map. He was going into the room of requirement.
Of course, and that explains the vanishing cabinet as well.
Ooh, that's the end of it.
Ian.
Yeah. And all right, next chapter. This is a very large one.
Yeah, they all are.
Chapter 26, The Cave.
More like
according to a test screen viewer, there's a scene before they leave Hogwarts which seems to have replaced the argument in the forest between Dumbledore and Snape. Quoting here, when Harry goes to the top of the astronomy tower to meet up with Dumbledore to go to the cave, he is just walking in when Snape, who had obviously been discussing something with Dumbledore, gives Harry his infamous, intimidating stare and walks swiftly out. It is a very brief moment, and nothing more is said about it. Although I think it is safe to assume Snape and Dumbledore were discussing Dumbledore's death, and/or maybe discussing Harry and how he has to die.
Well,
ooh, that's a big spoiler alert there.
Oh, yeah.
What?
It's nice that they keep it for, like,
I'm sure everybody who's listening to this has read the 7th book.
Yeah, and I wrote
anyways.
That.
The viewers have watched Deathly Hallows.
Well, it would be something to flashback to during the Prince's Tale and Deathly Hallows.
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh, this picture is where they're about to apparate, man.
Yeah, so then there was a shot in the trailer, a brief shot from the Japanese trailer, just as they're leaving the tower, apparating away.
Why are they apparating out of Hogwarts? They're not allowed to. It's not... Oh, God. Canon.
No. They addressed it, which was great. Harry says to Dumbledore right there in that scene. He says to Dumbledore, "Hey, I thought we couldn't operate in or outside Hogwarts. You know, Hermione Granger told me, or something like that." And he says, "You're really? Right, but that's Headmaster's privilege."
Oh, so does he say that when they're leaving or when they're coming back? I guess it would be when they're leaving, because when they're coming back, Dumbledore would be too weak probably to.
No, he says it when they're leaving. The Harry was surprised that they're going to leave right from up there.
Right. Oh, okay. The exterior cave scenes were said to be, they were going to be filmed at Cape Wrath.
Wraith.
Is it Wraith? No, it's Cape Wrath.
There's an eye.
Wraith sounds right.
I've never heard of Cape Wraith. I've heard of Cape Wrath. But. Anyways, I thought maybe it was some British, thing with the pronunciation there.
Yeah.
Stuart Craig has stated in an interview for Movie Magic, the decision was made to use a crystal cave instead of a limestone cave, which I really hate. He said, "A key to what we did this time was our initial research. We started by saying, what's interesting about a cave? Well, stalagmites and stalactites are probably the most familiar, almost cliched of limestone caves. So we started to examine crystal caves and look to the pictures of this incredible quartz cave in Mexico. We did visit one in Switzerland and thought, what other kind of crystal caves are there? It turned out to be a salt crystal cave outside Frankfurt in Germany. So we went there and it's part of a cast phosphate mining complex, but there's also rock salt down there. And in this one area, salt crystals, which are completely transparent and glass-like. We took extensive photographs and used that as our inspiration. What it's done is given us this hopefully fantastic set and fantastic world, but with a bit of geological credibility at the same time, which we've always tried to do. Yes, it's a magical world, but it's grounded in a recognizable reality. We've treated the cave as an extension of the architecture in that respect."
I actually really, really like that they decided on the crystal cave because,
looks like
and I've said this before, it really helps to express Voldemort's personality and his narcissism.
Yeah,
everything like that, and it's just it looks really cool with like the fire.
It looks like the cave.
my initial reaction was to be like what did they do? Like what were they thinking when they got out of this cave? But as I that was also me trying to push out what I already knew and from my head, and already had pictured in my head. And like as soon as I did, it's a really cool. Most people who've been to caves have not seen one like this. And you know what I mean? Like it's just not. But that does go straight with how Voldemort, thinks.
Well, yeah, because they're very rare. There's hardly any of them throughout the world.
Right.
Hence why Voldemort would pick one.
But the thing is. Yeah, I guess. But anyways, the crystals are way too big. They just look unrealistic. They could have done it a little more. I don't know. They look the Cave of the Giants. That's about it. But
yeah, it does. It takes away a little bit from. But at the same time, it's just an issue of switching your head. Yeah, it's a little bit. But it took me it was mostly just trying to get rid of the picture I already had in my head. But. Then again, a lot of the movies like that. You just have to get rid of the picture you had in your head and to go with it. So,
Well, I don't think that's what Jo was envisioning when she wrote about the cave.
No, probably not. But it doesn't. She obviously doesn't mind. So,
usually I'm really big on the canon stuff, but this I don't mind because I think, it's great when a set can express the personality of the person who made it or put it together.
Yeah.
The character.
It wasn't described as a limestone cave, was it? I don't think it ever was.
It was just a cave.
It was a cave. So it really was left open to the imagination of whoever thought of it. If someone, had only visited a cave like this, this is what they think of.
Yeah. What's been said is the inspiration for the cave that she wrote or whatever was this cave that was near her house. And I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's definitely a limestone cave.
Well, yeah, that's true. I like that she used the forest, one of the forests in Deathly Hallows, like that she lived, right next to.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Forest of Dean. Yeah, sorry, totally off topic,
yeah,
but anyway.
Actually film there for the. That would be cool if they actually filmed at the real location.
Yeah, totally. Right, awesome. Definitely. Yeah. What's next for
Yeah. Anyway, the cave looks ridiculous. It looks like it came from Superman. Moving on.
That's what I said. I'm glad you thought so, too, because that's what I thought of. The first thing I thought of was Superman. Superman's cave. Anyway, go ahead.
I think somebody else said that, too, one of the test screens. Let's see.
No, that was me.
Oh, yeah, here it is. A set report teaser from Snitch Seeker contained a brief description of the cave. In terms of new sets, we saw the cave construction, which will feature a climactic scene with Dumbledore and Harry, the inside of which I can only describe as being a cross between Isla de Muerta in Pirates of the Caribbean and the Curse of the Black Pearl. Yeah, that was a pretty cool cave. And the cave in Superman Returns. With the CGI effects added, I can only imagine how expansive it will look and how eerie it will be with this in-free inhabitants. Dumbledore's hand, not first shown, but first shown to us. Huh?
You skipped, the exterior of the cave was shown in the second and third trailers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there's a bunch of pictures of the outside of the cave. That was shown in the couple trailers. And then Dumbledore and Harry on a rock out in the middle of the ocean or sea or whatever. Looks more like an ocean because the waves are really crashing. But
yeah.
It was a cool shot, and it wasn't even finished when I saw it. It was like digitalized, you know, like there was like pixelated waves, but they were still huge. It was cool.
I think somebody figured out that this might not actually be Cape Wraith or whatever. Well, they may film some scenes there, but we determined that this is someplace in Ireland, these cliffs here, because I've...
Yeah, wasn't it filmed there? I thought that's where it was filmed, was outside Ireland.
Yeah, but that's not where Cape Wraith is.
Right.
But I think they filmed in multiple locations.
Yeah, aren't those rocks though, limestone rocks? Yeah, I think the outside is limestone rock. I'm not sure. I'm no scientist. Geologist, whatever.
But Ireland. They were looking a lot of different places. Switzerland, I think, too, was another option for a while. We were shown the hand in a shot from the second trailer when Dumbledore is opening the entrance to the cave, and I don't know, it just looks like a little black and ashen. Nothing too spectacular, I didn't think. But it might not have been a finished effect either here.
I really do like the hand.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Sort of. You couldn't really tell when you saw the movie, though. Like, when I was watching the movie, I kept looking for the hand, and I really couldn't see it that well. It was too dark. Like, I don't know.
It's the girl that called into Leaky, what was that, last week or for their podcast, was saying that you could see it, like, really clearly when they first apparate, I guess.
Oh, really?
That effect was finished. I don't know why we haven't seen it in the trailer, but she said it looked really cool or whatever in December of 2007, I think.
November.
With his hair down, Yates is directing him how to drink the potion or how to pull up the invisible chain and pull the boat out of the water. Not exactly sure how you guys could tell that, but he's directing him to do something.
Well, that's a hero, probably.
No,
you
Vince
probably
did, actually. Vince did when he first...
Oh, yeah.
That was in there from
yes.
the very beginning of the list.
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did. Well, what else could it be?
I don't know. Well, he's directing him
well,
to do something.
The chain's pretty obvious.
It's either him pulling off the chain,
it could be the chain.
Or him drinking
the potion. And then we actually see that finished effect or whatever in the Japanese trailer.
Well, the Japanese
first we see him cast a spell. to find the middle of the lake, I guess?
Yeah, that's what it's got to be, because you see this big white thing coming from the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it kind of...
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what that was. Maybe that's... Yeah.
Was, is that what happened, Rachel? Because I kind of guessed that. Rachel?
Huh? What? I thought I wasn't paying attention, I'm sorry.
Movie, did... did Dumbledore, like, cast the spell to find the middle of the lake and that we all made a big light?
I don't know.
So there will be light.
It's in the middle or something?
Oh, you mean that light in there? Yeah, I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. No, I think those are trees. Isn't that the dark mark that they're seeing us start up? I don't know.
What?
What?
In the cave?
Oh, it's in the cave? I don't know what
I'm
that is.
Not exactly sure what it was. It was a blurry shot of, like, this white light.
It might be out of the cave. It might be...
I don't think that's in the cave.
Yeah.
That's the tree tops. I think that's the dark mark that you're seeing.
But oh!
I saw it too, actually. Yeah.
It's hard to tell. It's blurry.
Yeah, it's the way that they put it together in the trailer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a final shot, finalized shot, though, of Dumbledore grabbing the chain that was in... Was that the sneak peeks, I guess?
Yeah,
the ABC one.
Of the blessed locket.
And the behind-the-scenes shot of Harry in the cave. And cool shot that was in one of the ABC sneak peeks is the locket being taken from the basin.
That's it. It's a fake locket.
Yeah.
No, it's a fake locket, yeah. I do like that they've made the locket to help.
And then we get into the inquiry. These were briefly described by Dan Radcliffe. He said, "They're horrible, Shivers Radcliffe. They made me think of bodies in concentration camps. It's that terrible look of a body that's wasted away, but not a skeleton. There are a couple of child inferi, too." An additional brief description was contained in the leaky set report teaser. Quote, "And the dried-out, twisted mutation on zombies that will end up as the inferi."
Oh.
And then, yeah, Rachel also discussed the inferi on... our interview way back a while now. Episode 3. She later noted after seeing them in the third trailer that they were different than what was seen in the test screening, so they were not...
I can't believe I asked her if he has nightmares. I can't believe I asked her that.
And then we've since seen trailer shots of Harry fighting off the Inferi.
Yeah, they're not what I saw. It looks cool.
You can just see them in one of the shots and things. Well, skeletal.
Yeah, on the bottom of the screen.
I like the way they look, actually.
Still kind of hard to see, but you can kind of get an idea.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty good. I'll have to wait to see until I actually see the final movie, but I think they could have been better.
Well, I always picture them as like as real people with like cobwebbed eye, you know, like eyes that are like,
like
regular,
you know?
People that are just dead.
Yeah, and with a
yeah,
but,
well,
with
yeah, that's what it, I mean, it's, if they're rotting or whatever or. Decomposing in the water for 50 years.
I don't think they did decompose, though. That's the thing. Like, because, you know, there's a spell on them. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Somebody posted on the thread, like, what happens when a body is... So they get all, like, dried out and everything. And, then we have shots of... Oh, yeah, you can see them in the other shot when Dumbledore casts the fire as well, like falling back into the water.
That's a cool shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gandalf, eat your heart out.
Oh, and I can see what, I think it was Brooke said earlier, about the crystals within the fire. It does look cool there because they all glow orangey.
Yeah. That, like, just makes everything so much cooler looking.
And they might have made it a cinematography.
Maybe.
They might have done
that. And then Rachel stated that the cave scene was of a good length during the interview. And she said it was like at least 10 minutes, so that's a good length for that scene, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, who wants to read this?
Okay, we have Rachel's lengthy description. Well, I think it was Rachel, but yeah, viewer description sequence in great detail. Okay,
this
so we
is
start
the one I posted
with
at Leaky.
Dumbledore, yeah. Dumbledore meets Harry at the top of the astronomy tower and they apparate to outside the cave. As they're leaving, Harry is surprised that they can apparate from within the Hogwarts grounds, and Dumbledore says something along the lines of, "That's the beauty of being headmaster." The scene they apparate to, despite being slightly unfinished, was nonetheless absolutely breathtaking. Cliffs and huge waves dominate the scene. Dumbledore finds their way to the antechamber and slits his hand. For you Star Trek fans, he does it in a Klingon way, straight across the inside of his hand. The wall crumbles away, and Dumbledore explains to Harry that Voldemort would have set up defenses around the Horcrux. The cave is very different than what I had pictured and than all the fan art I have seen, but still a chilling and amazing sight. It reminded me a bit of a normal cave mixed with the ice crystal place Superman goes to in one of his movies. The whole cave is a vast formation of huge crystals, jagged and rough, jutting out from the ceiling, walls, and floor. They make their way to the water, and Dumbledore cautions Harry not to touch it, and he starts to raise the boat with magic. Then he has Harry reel it in with a very heavy, long chain. The island is a formation of crystals, as is the basin. Now, the only really cheesy and unspectacular thing about this whole scene is that they use a large white clamshell, partially embedded in a small rock, to scoop up the potion. In my opinion, it looked rather silly. Dumbledore tells Harry to force him to drink the potion, and Gambon once again does a slightly better than usual job being forced to drink the potion. At one point towards the end, you can very softly hear Dumbledore mumble something like, "Please don't hurt them, it's all my fault." But it was almost inaudible, and I doubt anyone who has not read the book caught the line at all. Then, after the last scoop is drunk, Gambon kind of goes back to his rather poor, unresearched acting and says with far too much strength, "Harry, water." But first, Harry goes back to the basin and recovers the locket, and in the background, we can hear Dumbledore saying, "Harry, water," getting slightly weaker each time he says it. Harry attempts to fill the basin with water and the Aguamenti charm, but cannot get the scoop, the water up with that silly shell. After trying several times and Dumbledore starting to collapse, he goes to the lake to fill it there. Suddenly, the light that was emanating from the island within the basin goes out, and Harry lights his wand. Most unfortunately, with the non-existent spell Luminous Maximus, or whatever it was he used at the beginning of the third movie, and slowly reaches down to scoop up the lake water. The moment he touches it, a hand reaches out and grabs Harry's wrist. The whole audience jumped in fear. Harry tries to fend off the inquiry with all the spells we hear him try in the books. But in the end, he is pulled down into the water. Before I go on, I must say the inquiry scene was one of the most spectacular of this movie. They looked a bit like the newer version of the Dementor, but much more human-shaped and brownish. I fear I am not describing them well because they were truly a scary sight to see. The camera angles captured the scene of Harry trying hopelessly to defend himself and Dumbledore from them as they clambered onto the island from all different angles, and the sheer number of them eventually overwhelms Harry, and he is pulled down deep into the lake. While Harry is underwater, the view we have is from below him looking up, and we can see the whole island from below as well. Suddenly, the inquiry holding Harry releases him, and he swims up to the surface, covered in fierce flame. The ring of fire Dumbledore conjures is an unbelievable sight, far more than I think anyone pictured in the books, but incredibly spectacular. Harry and Dumbledore climb back in the boat, and the scene then cuts to Harry helping Dumbledore through the cave. The ever so anticipated lines of, I am paraphrasing, "Don't worry, sir, I'll get us back," and Dumbledore replying, "I am not worried, I am with you," are said. Executed very well by Radcliffe, though rather poorly, in my opinion, by Gambin, who clearly does not know the significant emotional value we fans know those lines have.
Okay, this is really important.
Okay.
That's really important, that line, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you really think that it was that bad, Rachel? Or
is
it just your Gambin?
One of the reasons why it was so clear that I'm not a Gambin fan is because I don't know if I'm, you know, being fair or not. Personally, I thought it was, I thought it kind of was, like, not executed well. But then again, Vince, you'll probably like it.
Yeah, I've heard most of the other test screeners say that it did well.
How did he say it exactly? How did he say it? Like, was he a weak, or was he, like, was it just, like, his a normal voice, or was he, like, in pain? Like
no,
how did he sing?
Like, don't worry, I'm with you. I don't know. I don't remember. It's been months and months since it's 6 months now? So I don't remember, but, not 6 months, but, like, 4 months.
Yeah.
But still, it was, like, I remember thinking, oh. Like, couldn't they have said it, but, I thought Dan Radcliffe was doing really well. But Dumbledore it didn't seem to be filled with a lot of love and respect and admiration.
Yeah.
And emotion. Yeah. It seemed to be kind of flat. Then again, you know, that could just be me. So.
Yeah.
Or you guys all start your I hate Rachel group on IMDb. Oh.
Please don't do that. Yeah, please don't do that, guys.
Yeah, Rachel's cool.
These are kind of minor details, but so Harry actually said the Aguamenti charm, because that would be the first time that we've seen that in the movies.
Yeah, he does.
That's right. Yeah, it would be the first time.
And he tries to cast Sectum Semper on the Empery. Because that was like his...
Yeah, I believe he does. I'm almost positive.
Thought that would work, but they didn't have any blood to bleed, so it like, you know, just, it didn't do anything
to him.
I
think it slashed them, if I remember correctly. But I don't remember.
Oh.
I remember him hearing that's... using that one, and he used what's that, the one that, that charm that ties up people. Stupefy and all the other ones, yeah. But no, the one that ties up people, I forgot the name of that spell.
Like, forever, like what Umbridge did,
exactly.
Centaurs and
Incarcerus, isn't it?
Incarcerus, yeah.
Incarcerus, yeah.
I only watched it the other day.
I think he actually tried Incarcerus.
Is that a spell from the book? Was that made up for the movie? I can't remember.
I think it's in the book. That's the spell that conjures up the rope, right? Yeah.
I know, because I can hear Jim Dale doing it. So yeah, it's definitely in the book.
I love that they managed to get in Lumos Maxima. How many Maxima charms there are in the movie, the better.
Good God.
Continuity sake.
Maxima. I can't stand that spell.
Well, hey, that's good for, you know, continuity sake.
Yeah.
That's just, yeah. True.
You know, the one time they care about continuity.
Yeah, really, when it pertains to their spell. Yeah.
Bombarda and Lumos.
Speaking of continuity, who are Wormtail, Badfoot, Prongs, and
Yeah, really, that's a good question.
Yeah, who are they? You know, never found out in the movies there. Anyway.
Yeah, something I thought was really cool when I first read Rachel's description here on Leaky after the test screening was how the Inferi actually drag Harry under the water, like, they're even kind of amping that scene up a bit more, making it a little bit more epic.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. That should be neat.
That's what you need, like in a movie. You need to, like, dramatize it, you know what I mean?
More of a sense of danger, like, you know, he might drown that these characters are dragging him under, and he's...
Yeah, like, we gotta reach, like, some kind of a climax, you know what I mean? They do... I managed to actually drag him down into the water. I love that.
Yeah.
Hmm. I think that's
like
even
that, Aaron?
That's even better than the book. I think actually, if I must admit.
Dylan, what do you think?
What do you think?
Dylan.
I like it. All right.
Yeah, he looks. even though he didn't speak for the first hour.
He's shy.
Yeah, just for the record, Dylan's been here. He just
had
the
entire time. Yeah, he's here.
So then, the last thing in this chapter is... Rachel said that Dumbledore's wand, the Elder Wand, was given importance during this scene. Like, it was... They actually made a point to show it.
Yeah,
we got to see it, which is like... But they don't really explain why or anything. They just show it. Like a full... Yeah. Like, you get to fully see it, yeah. In a way that you wouldn't necessarily miss.
Yeah, well, it was... It also looked like they were going to show it in the other scene, but as far as we know, that's been cut because it wasn't seen in the test screening. The one in Dumbledore's office with McGonagall.
Yeah, it wasn't there, but I'm wondering if they're going to add it back in.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah, that was actually
the screenshot. It was really cool.
One of my favorite of the stills that we have back then.
Yeah,
it's a good shot. I mean, it looks like they... And they kind of need it to add to the grief, you know? But,
So, then we get to chapter 27, The Lightning Struck Tower. And...
Well, this is it. This is the real climax.
And for me, this is the part that they screwed up the worst.
Because they
got the battle.
Oh, no. This is different. No, this is up on the tower.
Oh, well, I guess... Okay, yeah, that's chapter 28, I guess.
Yeah, the battle's in the... And they,
yeah, but they still have, like, beginning of the invasion, kind of, which is cool, but... So, yeah, we have a script that was leaked on IMDb of the beginning of the invasion, and multiple shots from various sources, the trailers, and...
Oh, it's like, ignore that for now, because So, for this script, we had me playing Harry, like always. And, yeah, like always. I never get another part, how sad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You never did.
Vince, you're Dumbledore?
Yep. I'm Dumbledore again.
Yeah. Who's McGonagall?
And
Britt.
Britt.
I'm McGonagall?
Where's Britt?
No.
Britt's Hermione, though.
Because we're great. We've already got this reported. What? Is there a Hermione?
Oh, we do? Oh.
Britt, are you there?
Yeah, we've already got this reported.
I think you do.
And it's Scott, you've got the narration.
The narrator, as always.
I'm not doing anything?
I guess we already have it recorded.
Yeah.
We have it recorded.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, this is our last script ever in the list section, so it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is, what, number 9? We've had a lot of scripts leaked this time.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, team.
Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix ones came out, like, a week beforehand. These ones are out for, like, months.
Oh, really?
Months? No, it was out for years, Aaron. It was out for a year now.
Oh, yeah, Order of Phoenix was only one poster. It was just that, I don't even remember his name now. Phoenix, I guess. Phoenix 123, that's right. But this time it's like multiple sources leaking multiple scripts.
304. And it had 10 scripts, portions.
10 total? Yeah.
And he has 20 pages scripts. It's about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let's get this final script down, and then we can cry afterwards.
Scene 124, exterior entrance cave. Harry and Dumbledore emerge from the cave. Dumbledore, pale and weak, scans the stars wearily, leans heavily on Harry.
Don't worry, sir. We're nearly there.
I am not worried, Harry. I am with you.
Scene 125, interior Great Hall, same time, night. We hold on the gothic glass of the main window. Ambient light, ominous and cool, plays across its shimmery surface. Flitwick, arms flowing gracefully, conducts a group of fifth-years, looks up toward the window, eyes a pulsating light. Scene 126, exterior courtyard, same time, night. McGonagall stands in the courtyard as the choir drifts faintly on the night air. She glances up to the sky, a curious expression on her face, then spies a pair of first-years straggling across the courtyard.
Sure have no twilight.
As they scuttle off, McGonagall looks back to the sky. A vortex of clouds swirls eerily in on itself. We pull back. Scene 127, interior window, castle, same time, night. We pull back out of the window, its glass prickling with ambient light, and find Snape standing silently, staring at the gathering storm, his expression inscrutable, the choir a murmur. Scene 128, interior common room, same time, night. Darker than usual, the fire muted. Ron and Hermione sit together, silent, glance toward the window, the sky beyond. Scene 129, interior hospital wing, same time, night. Draco's face, skin glimmering with the light, crawling across the ceiling above him. He stares, unblinking, swings out of bed. Bare feet, Draco's, drop to the tiles. Scene 130, interior corridor, moment later, night. The choir echoes eerily. Sixth years, little more than shadows, hang out, giggling in dark corners. Malfoy glides by in his bare feet. Unnoticed. A ghost. Scene 131. Interior room of requirement. Moments later, night. Dense with shadow. Strange slashes of light. Malfoy, a shadow within shadows, pulls the tapestry from the vanishing cabinet, steps back. He stares at the monolith before him, lifts his wand, and begins to chant eerily. The surface of the cabinet glimmers, a tremble in the ambient light, almost alive. Then he stops, looking back, his eyes haunted. He slips away. Light plays within the cabinet. Movement. Shadows flicker within. Coalesce. We ease up, reveal. Bellatrix, Greyback, and a few friends. Bellatrix steps into the light, glances around, and grins.
Well, Oh, I just wanted to talk about the script a bit, but, I think it's really cool that they're at least keeping, like, how, Draco actually, like, goes off to the room of requirement and lets the Death Eaters in, and we actually see them, like, coming out of the cabinet.
Yeah, show them.
That was, like, something that wasn't actually seen in the book.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
I think
because in a film, you gotta show, not tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember maybe, a few weeks before we got the script, there was some fake, trailer.
Yeah, there was the fake trailer description that said that this was gonna...
Yeah, we got tons of those back in because we were bone dry of views.
Bellatrix peering out
and
of
the... And
okay.
But yeah, that fake description over it had Bellatrix peering out of the cabinet. So it was a bit surprising when we got the script. Or actually, we weren't really sure at first if it was real because of that. But...
I don't remember.
Send it to me. It was the first time I ever saw a script leak. Was this particular one? Because I remember writing back and saying, like, "How did you get that? Like, that was exactly what I saw." Remember?
Yeah.
That was exactly my response. I was shocked that you had it. So I didn't. So this was definitely real.
But I think it's like really cool with like the
Thank
vortex and clouds and the changing like atmosphere and everything outside. I mean, even though, like, I don't know exactly how that would happen. I mean, I guess just the presence that they're approaching.
No,
it fills up the atmosphere.
It's just really cool, though. Yeah.
No, it was to create the atmosphere that there's evil coming. But I can tell you that the way it was
Something wicked this way comes.
Right, but the way it was done was somewhat confusing in the movie. Like, it looked cool. It looked great, but it wasn't really clear as to what was going on or why they were saying certain, like, I'm trying to find the moment, but like, when she goes back to your house, there's no dawdling, like, what, why? You know, like, there was little things like that.
It's kind of weird. It's like, everybody knows that something's gonna happen, but then they just, like, go and hide and let the Death Eaters come and kill Dumbledore and then walk out. It's just weird.
Because
Harry didn't actually say anything to Hermione or Ron before he left, did he? Like, you know, be on watch for Draco or something, because he didn't actually really have any... Well, he had suspicions, but he didn't know what was up.
No, I don't think so.
He didn't know.
I don't think.
Yeah, he didn't give him the feels
of
this or anything like that. I think they could have really, I don't know how, but I think they could have made a really cool sequence out of Draco using the Hand of Glory and the darkness powder and all that. I thought that was really cool in the book.
That would have been awesome.
Because it might have just, I mean, how would you do that? It'd just be a black screen, but I guess they could figure out something.
Yeah, you feel the hand or whatever. Well, I guess you wouldn't do that only because it's like your shoulder.
Alright.
Wait. We have multiple shots.
Wait, Scott.
Oh.
Do you want to say something, Dylan?
Yeah, you know, I don't really care if the scene is pointless, as it pretty much sounds like it is. I guess it just adds to the mood of the film, I guess, or the event that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because that's something I felt suspense. Order of the Phoenix lacked. It just lacked these shots of the world, you know.
I agree. It lacked that rack up of suspense.
Prisoner of Azkaban had so many shots of, you know, pointless, but it just added to the story and to the mood of the situation. And
the atmosphere, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it was for atmosphere, but it was a little odd. Anyway,
yeah. It'll at least be a beautiful shot.
I think I was under the impression that something was cut from what I saw.
Yeah. Well, we don't see like Draco, shot of Draco, and then a shot of Snape. Do we see that in the movie, or is that cut?
I'm sorry, is it of where? Of Draco and Snape what?
Oh, from the fleek, yeah. Well, yeah, it goes to the choir, and then McGonagall talking to the first years or whatever, and then a shot of Snape, I guess, like looking out at the storm, like with a weird actually not any expression on his face really, but just like
just yeah, see, there was no choir. There was no choir in what I saw, and that could have been added in later. You know what I mean? But no choir sound. But like, if Snape was there, he could have been. I don't remember it, but it is something I could have easily missed.
And then, did you see Ron and Hermione in the common room, looking out at the sky?
Yes. Yes. Okay. But
Draco sneaking off to the room of requirement and all that.
Yes, and that actually confused me because at first I was like. I'm like, is that what the Slytherin dorms look like? And then I realized he was still in the hospital wing from the second
Semper. Oh, cool. He was in the hospital wing?
Yeah, because of Sectum Sempra. He was
there. For some reason, I missed that from the list.
Yeah, I got that, yeah.
So,
we have multiple shots from this script portion that have emerged from different sources, and there's one of the, I guess it's the swirling vortex clouds or whatever that are approaching outside above the castle from the trailer. And then, like, an agenda book or something showed Ron and Hermione standing, looking out the Gryffindor common room window, I think, at the atmosphere with the worried expression on their face. And then the Japanese trailer. Japanese trailer showed a silhouette shadow walking up the stairs, and we think that's Draco. Was that Draco? Rachel, does that shot seem familiar at all?
At the very end of the hall. Is that what you're referring to?
The one.
There's like a shadow walking up the spiral stairs.
Yeah, I think that's him.
Okay.
But I'm not positive, but it probably is. And so that's the staircase. Wasn't the staircase that we saw, what's his name on? Harry on? In one of the shots. I'm trying to figure out where he was.
Yeah, maybe. But that would be going up to Dumbledore's office, so I'm not sure.
No, but maybe
and
it wasn't.
There's shots in, like, the hallway, like a long corridor of Draco walking, I guess, towards the Room of Requirement, yeah. Oh, the one here might actually be right outside the entrance. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah,
and then there's
a
yeah, with the
because it looks like
lamp.
The
tapestry. Yeah,
it looks like
right. Yeah, and then the a shot from the, was it the second trailer, I think, where he's pulling the tapestry off of the cabinet, which looks really cool. Yeah, and then Dumbledore and Harry are on their way back, and Stuart Craig confirmed that he built the astronomy tower.
That's good. Just to know that he built the friggin' set.
Powerful, but yeah. Some teaser from Harry Potter fandom contained a brief description of it. They said, we're nearing the end of the visit when we're given a first-hand look at the construction of the astronomy tower. The wooden structure is enormous. Even at a place like Leavesden, it looks as if it towers above everything else. I can't imagine what it'll look like on film. Construction is well underway. The framework appears to be complete, and on one side, the walls are being painted. This is a truly breathtaking spectacle. And then there was a shot from the Half-Blood Prince video game, which is based on the film, of the astronomy tower interior. Looks pretty cool. Mm-hmm. There's like this big sphere gyroscope thing in the middle. It's kind of interesting. And a change in Harry's and Dumbledore's actions has occurred, according to test screen viewers. When they get back and Dumbledore fills in and off forever, Harry is not frozen by Dumbledore and is on the floor below the top of the astronomy tower, looking up through the floorboards of the events.
Yeah, I'm test used to screening this now. Wait,
yeah.
We're going to discuss this.
Because they couldn't really do that scene, like, the way, it'd be hard to do a visual of what we were, I've always been wondering about that ever since I
read
the
book.
Well, I think they could do it like they did in Chamber of Secrets when they're in Hagrid's hut, and, like, you see the shots, like, through the cloak. I think that could have worked, but,
But how would you represent the fact that he was frozen? So, because like, if he was frozen, that people would have to know the spell.
I don't know if he can do that well enough, but yeah, that would have to be on Dan there with probably how his facial expression and everything is.
Yeah, and people would still be confused by it. You know, they would. People would be like, "What? What? You know, even though it was, people heard the spell, people would still be like, "What? You know, why didn't he do anything?" And I think they put him under the floor. The reason why they did was because he couldn't get a good aim under the floor. He was trying, but he couldn't, it showed him to be somewhat, impotent in,
Was he trying to aim a spell, through the floorboards?
Yes.
Or, up around the corner or something?
Yes, he is. Okay. But he can't quite do it. And then all of a sudden, Snape comes in. And it's actually quite a chilling moment. It does make you, go, it gives you that feeling in your belly. And you're there's Snape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is it, you know what I mean? This is the scene, coming up.
Yeah.
And being frozen does benefit with the book, because in the book you can write about Harry's thoughts, but in the movie you can't see Harry's thoughts. You have to see his facial expressions. And if he's frozen.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. I mean, I really did. It was different, and there's no question that it's not the same.
Yeah, I really don't have a problem with this, actually.
And for me, for a person who does have a problem with things like that, I actually don't mind it. I thought it was good, and I thought it'd give you a good feeling of suspense and worry and uncertainty and all the things that you're supposed to feel for the scene. So it gets the feeling.
And I have
across.
A problem with a lot of things, but not this. I don't see why this would feel. It's just a minor change, really.
At first I did, but then I warmed up to it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Test screening viewer also confirms Draco's disarming of Dumbledore. Yes, he, Draco, does disarm Dumbledore, and Dumbledore looks startled.
Well, I should hope he looks startled.
Does his wand go flying over the edge, then?
I believe so, but I don't remember for sure.
That's the flaw in the plan right there.
Yep.
Screwed up his plans.
Well, it's good he does, because then there'd be no other movie if he doesn't.
Well, there would be another
movie. If they didn't have
just that, he wouldn't be the...
Dumbledore, they basically just screwed up Deathly Hallows. I think.
Well, Harry just wouldn't be the Master of Death, that's all.
No, you're the Master.
You would be.
Yeah.
Thanks, Fritz.
That's really good. Shots of the Scene came from the third trailer released in November and the Japanese trailer from January. There's a shot of them apparating back with Dumbledore has his arm around Harry. Harry's supporting him. It's really cool. Like, Dumbledore looks like he's really weak there.
Sick.
Which is good. Sick, yeah.
Dying.
And there's like a panoramic shot from the outside looking at the whole castle and kind of the astronomy tower. I guess that's during that scene because it is at night, so I'm not really sure. And then we have...
from the recent Japanese television trailer.
Yeah, but we didn't actually talk about that part, did we? Anyway, I mean, we've talked about it a bunch in the past. Snape shushing Harry. There's shots of that.
I just want to talk about this.
Kadabra.
It is before he kills Dumbledore. He shushes Harry before, not after.
Yeah, not after.
This is before, not after. Repeat,
so,
before,
those,
not after.
Those lines on IMDb don't make any sense where Harry says, what is it, he trusted you or something like that?
Shush.
He trusted. After Harry said shush to him? Because it's before, so I don't know why Harry would respond with he trusted you when he doesn't even know that Snape's about to kill him.
really.
Tempted with the lines from IMDb, some quotes. Yeah.
Most quotes, right?
He trusted you, not the shush me.
And then we also see, I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, but we also see Harry's reaction to the Avada Kedavra, because, like, in the trailer, as you go from one millisecond to the next forever, his face, like, lights up kind of green or whatever, so it looks like he's looking out on... I don't know if it's going to be kind of slow-mo or how that's going to work.
What, the Avada Kedavra? I can't tell you for sure because the one part that was unfinished was when Dumbledore goes over the edge. We could see Dumbledore kind of, like, almost like he was, like, lying flat on, like, a, like in midair. Like,
and that's why the scene had no power. That's probably why the scene sucks.
It's probably on Snape. Snape is casting the spell. But then do you remember it cutting away to Harry for a moment before it went back to, like, showing Dumbledore just hanging there?
I think it did, but it was a kind of a fast sequence. It may have been slightly slowed down, but I don't think it was. I think Dumbledore falling might be slightly.
It seems like it kind of have to be, like, because the spell would just kind of be almost, you know, instantaneous. Like, it seems like they'd have to slow down time to cut away to Harry and then
spell,
cut back.
The spell goes, like, out of his wand. You know, it shoots out of his wand at Dumbledore. So, like, you see the green, like, actually.
Right.
This is out of memory, but, you know, like, I'm virtually certain this is how I remember it. But, like, the spell literally hits him and throws him backwards off the edge. And I think they cut to Harry's face, and then they go back to him going over the edge. Or it's the other way around. But, like, you see all three. Like, you see all three of them at some point.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that they would have had to have done it in slow-mo to cut away to showing Harry's reaction to the spell being cast.
Him afterwards, though. I don't think it slowed down very much, though. It didn't seem... It wasn't slowed down for me, but, like... But it's still not badly done. Like, there's enough. You can see the spell hit him. You can see, like, that he flies up and he goes over the edge. Like, the scene that we see him is he's literally over the edge. We see the ground below him.
Yeah, but we have no idea if we actually pan down or, like, actually see him fall all the way to the ground, do we? Because that scene just kind of was unfinished.
Well, they're high up. If I were to take a guess on that, we see him kind of falling into oblivion and upset.
Falling over the edge. Yeah. Well, there was, like, there was a report, but it was from that Scoop guy, right, that said that we see him fall, like, crash all the way to the ground, and people were like, that's graphic or whatever, and especially for a PG film now, but, so, yeah, I'm guessing we'll probably see him fall over the edge, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I don't, how, you know, showing someone hit the ground is kind of pointless. Like, it's to see him falling all the way to the ground, like, it wouldn't really show what we need it, what we need to see. We don't need to see it. Like, we, obviously, he's dead.
Yeah, well,
like,
it'd be more dramatic.
I mean, if we don't know already from the fourth movie that he's, that ever, Avada Kedavra is a killing curse, then, you know, that's your loss. So, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure
that out by now.
Yeah, then the filmmakers have really screwed up.
Yeah.
If that's the case. So yeah, then we have a shot of the Death Eaters, or, well, Bellatrix, casting the Dark Mark into the sky. So, like, the Dark Mark is actually cast after Dumbledore is dead this time, instead of enticing him to hurry back to the castle, like, in the book.
Yeah, because there's no need for that now, because they apparate straight to the tower.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
That kind of annoyed me that they're...
Yeah, it's kind of sad that I kind of wanted to see them fly back on the broomstick. That would have been kind of... I don't think Gamma could have handled that, probably. Because, like, that's... I mean, the younger actors have said that, like, filming those sequences are hard on them even. I mean...
Yeah.
I don't think Gamma would be able to handle that, probably.
Yeah.
And then we see the new Dark Mark, which is really cool, but it's not green, but it's still cool.
Get over it.
Get over it.
It's not canon, I don't like it.
Stop with the canons.
Well,
no,
it's cool.
It's really okay. I'm a canon freak too, so
it just doesn't stand out enough. The surrounding sky is like the same color, it's just not prominent enough, but it's more sinister.
It's more suggestive and sinister and ominous, yeah. I think.
It moves. It's like it's moving, you know, like you guys aren't seeing the full effect of it, like even through a trailer.
That's true.
Shot.
So
it's a lot more subtle. Like, a lot more subtle.
Like the shot of Hogwarts with it in the sky above it that was in the trailer.
Love that shot.
It's a really cool shot. It's just kind of hard to see because it blends in with the clouds around it. But.
You notice to the left, it's like some kind of light in the sky, I guess. I don't know.
Hmm?
It's really cool.
It's the moon, bro.
Yeah, I guess.
It's the crescent.
Oh, yeah.
And the lighting from the set, you know. Isn't it just a...
Really beautiful.
It's just a model, isn't it, that they're showing?
Yeah.
Aw,
yeah.
Oh, don't ruin it. No, it's real. It's all real. Shut up.
You're right. So
magic is real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've used, since the second film or whatever, they've used entirely the model for Hogwarts, at least for the outside or whatever.
Like
they used an actual castle for movies, but not anymore.
Well, they use castles and cathedrals and
for filming.
Yeah,
they used one called Blenheim Castle, which is so cool because my dog Chloe is a Blenheim Cavalier, and it's named after him because like he had Blenheim Cavaliers, so that's why it's called Blenheim Castle. Anyway,
so the movies...
I put that bit of trivia in.
Wow!
Yeah.
My God, even the movies are named after your dog. God, you're so lucky.
That's where the tree is. You know where they hang out under the tree by the lake. You know that's Blenheim Castle or Palace. It's actually Blenheim Palace, not.
Oh, I've been there.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I didn't know
they
filmed stuff there, but...
Okay, next.
What's the name of it?
Blenheim
like
Castle.
Right
that's the
Blenheim
one
Castle.
Where Winston Churchill was born, yes?
I don't know, but it's like, some people call it Blenheim.
Okay, guys.
Blenheim.
This is not a history lesson, no.
Well, I'm looking it up because I'm curious. That's not the name of it. Okay, so... Yeah, we kind of already talked about the pictures or whatever, but... A test screen viewer described those scenes. They then apparate back to the top of the astronomy tower. There is no Dark Mark in the sky. But as Dumbledore says he needs Severus, not Madame Pomfrey, they hear a commotion, and Dumbledore orders Harry to go and hide and not come out or interfere. A command that book Harry would never have followed, but that the movie Harry would obey. Harry goes underneath the wooden floor of the tower where Dumbledore is standing, where he can see everything through large gaps between the wood slates. Draco arrives, and Tom does a brilliant job as a boy trying to be fierce and terrified at the same time. Some lines from the book are rather butchered by Dumbledore, saying things like, "Draco, you are not an assassin. Then the Death Eaters arrive all in masks except Bellatrix and Greyback. Bellatrix urges Draco to do it, though his wand lowers slightly. Meanwhile, under the floor, Harry, who is watching terrified with his wand at the ready, is sneaked up on by Snape, whose wand is also out and puts his finger on his lips to make sure Harry stays quiet. My description does not quite capture that scene well enough, but I was surprised to find my heart ripping, perhaps because I knew what was going to happen when Snape appeared there. Snape quietly appears above, and Dumbledore, with far too much strength, says, "Severus, please." And Snape does the Avada Kedavra, and Bellatrix is ecstatic. The scene with Dumbledore being lifted in the air was unfortunately unfinished because we see him up in the air, and then apparently falling down the side of the tower, but there was no motion yet. He is stationary in both scenes. I am sure more special effects will be added later. Yeah. Then Bellatrix casts the Dark Mark, another amazing updated special effect with the black smoke skull and snake tongue.
That really should be.
I think the scene's going to be better in the final film.
That really should be like an epic kind of scene.
I think it's going to be better in the final film, hands down.
Yeah.
Curious if the description said they all had their masks on, because in the shots we've seen they don't, but maybe they take them off afterwards. Test screening viewers note that the film is basically finished once Dumbledore dies. There's maybe 5 to 8 minutes after his death.
Which I was okay.
Bad.
That's bad.
Which sucks. Yeah.
Well, there's not much after he dies. There's only like 3 chapters, one of which has been completely omitted, basically. Oh, actually, 2 has been gone.
My most anticipated sequence of the film has been cut.
Wait until 2011. You'll get it.
We've been waiting enough.
You'll get it in May 2011.
In Deathly Hollow, Part 2. Be sure to buy a ticket for that, too.
Completely different. The only similarity is the location. Other than that, this is just like small scale between the a few Death Eaters and the DA and the teachers, well, the Aurors in the book, but I mean, whereas Deathly Hollows is like a huge war, like a lot more epic, and there are different things going on, like the reason for it and everything, like
yes,
it's just a lot different.
Move on.
I wanted to see Jenny kick some ass. That was disappointing.
I was hoping that they would kind of make up for the lack of, fighting in the last one. How they screwed up in Order of the Phoenix with the Battle of the Ministry. It was, like, really lame, and I was hoping they'd make up for that, like, actually have the, the DA and everything, like, fighting off the Death Eaters and having them actually in a battle rather than just a stupid cat-and-mouse game.
Yeah, they could have given Neville more of a part. I mean, they really didn't, like, give him much of a part in this movie, so. Luna.
Yeah, come on, I want my Luna.
Well, I don't know. I like the battle in Order of Phoenix, and I'm not disappointed that the battle was cut in this time. It wasn't.
Oh, you tell him,
wasn't necessary to me.
Fight.
It wasn't very necessary, and it just only lasted a few
pages.
It's okay
that it wasn't there. We
really didn't know what happened in the battle until the hospital wing. I mean,
it would have been that's what I was wondering all the time, was like how they were going to do this. Are they going to do it as a flashback, or were they going to do it real time?
It couldn't be a flashback. And that's death on film to do a flashback.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that maybe they were just too lazy to figure it out, so they decided to just cut it, and they came up with this lame excuse and said, it's too repetitive, which it's not. Which
it's
is
not really
bullshit.
It is repetitive, though.
There was people on the thread that came up with creative ways to do whatever, and like if they had just thought about it a little bit, they could have done it. Like, and they didn't need a flashback; they could have shown it real time.
The way they could have really done it is, and I actually thought that this was slightly, it could have been considered missing, is that we do see scenes of them, the Death Eaters, the Death Eaters running through the school, And they could have had, and it doesn't matter who it was, like, but they could have had students and
somebody actually put up distance, yeah.
Actually firing at them or trying to catch them without it being an extension of the movie, without it adding too much time or too much of a it doesn't have to be a huge effort because if they're way ahead of them, it doesn't matter. But they could have had people trying to fight back.
Somebody actually put up resistance trying to protect the school. I mean, like,
But they're sleeping. They don't even know the Death Eaters are there. They just probably hear a bunch of noise and come down the corridors and, wow, there's Death Eaters running down the hallway.
Right,
I mean,
they're
probably gone by that time.
That's because they're sneaking in the castle. That's the whole point of...
Yeah, but the Order members would have known, would have thought ahead enough to... If they ran out and saw stuff that was going on, they would have fired.
And it makes Dumbledore look really competent and that he just doesn't care about the safety of his school at all, that he just leaves it completely unprotected. Like,
yeah,
he didn't even have the teacher on alert that something could happen. There's even a line...
Dumbledore let himself be killed.
They show in the trailer.
The protection around the school when Harry and Luna go inside in the Japanese trailer. You see all the mists come up and all that, and they show.
Yeah.
That.
They're blocking from outside. They don't think anyone's going to get in.
They also set up that you can't operate in the school. They also set that up, so we know that they're.
Okay, so in the movie, then Dumbledore doesn't suspect Draco at all or realize that, I mean, basically in the book, Dumbledore
in the
knew
book, he didn't, I,
that
wait,
Draco
he knew
was
about...
trying to fix his magic cabinet, and pretty much, I think, knew Draco's whole plan for the most part, and knew that the school was in danger.
But why would the school be in danger? I mean, they're coming there to kill Dumbledore, not harm the students. I mean, they can do that.
Yeah,
but Dumbledore
doesn't know that. Like that, I mean,
but he has
again,
his man there. He has Snape there.
Yeah,
get the Death Eaters out of the castle. It's going to
Snape's going to be the one who kills Dumbledore, and he trusts, you know, he trusts Snape.
Yeah.
Harry makes a big scene of it and says, oh, are you kidding? You're leaving the school now, like, completely unprotected everything? He's like... And Dumbledore tells Harry, you know, they could have at least had some lines or something like this, or maybe shown the teachers on guard or something, and fighting off the Death Eaters a bit, that, you know, do you really think that I don't care about the safety of my students, that I'm going to leave the school completely unprotected while I'm gone? And that's really what it seems like in the movie.
Harry is far more trusting of Dumbledore than book Harry was. I mean, Harry loved Dumbledore, admired him, and revered him in a lot of ways, but at the exact same time, he didn't fully trust him. He was well aware of the fact that he could make mistakes. Movie Harry has none of that, because it hasn't been built up. So it's not really necessary, as far as movie Harry, movie Dumbledore is a god to him. Like, he's just not going to make mistakes.
Yeah,
and he has no knowledge of any mistakes. You know, like part of what Harry thought of as a mistake in the book was that he trusted Snape, despite the fact that it was Snape who let go of the secret of, you know, who, it because Snape was the one who overheard the prophecy. This was not in the movie, so there's no reason not to trust him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just different. I mean, it's hard to compare those, like, you know, you just have to put it in perspective of movie Harry versus book Harry, you know what I mean? They're just slightly different people. So...
Dumbledore probably knows, you know, that Draco's going to be coming in from the inside, but he knows that the reason they're there is to kill him, you know, at least, and he knows that Draco's not going to succeed in it, it's going to be Snape who kills him, and he trusts Snape, but he puts, you know, we see in the trailer that shot of the... You know, they're protecting from outside forces, not exactly inside.
That's right. Well, and that's true in the book too. They were protecting from the Order of the Phoenix was there to protect people from coming in from the outside. They weren't expecting it from the inside. They had no idea that they could possibly get in that way. So, but then again, Dumbledore wasn't trusting Snape to make sure that Draco didn't kill him. that it was Snape instead, because he was worried about Draco's soul, you know? So,
So you think in the movie that Dumbledore is putting all of his trust in Snape, that he's going, that Snape is going to keep them from harming anybody that should not come to harm besides Dumbledore?
Yeah, I think so.
Drayback's probably the biggest worry, because in the book,
yeah,
he was, like, wanting to go about and rip out students' necks and stuff. I mean, like...
Well, and Dumbledore was surprised he was there. Remember, he even was surprised at Draco, that Draco would allow him to be there. And,
that's right.
But even Draco was surprised. Nobody was expecting him to be
there. Draco didn't want him there either. Draco said, I didn't have one creeper.
Yeah.
They don't want anyone
they cut
like
that part
that.
From the... It's like
you know
really
how much I love children,
really chilling to have in the movie that line where he talks about wanting to rip out their throats. Of course, that would not fly in a PG film again.
I'm a little surprised at the PG rating, but it's, I mean, I don't know. Anyway.
You just got that last line where they did.
It just seems like Dumbledore shows a bit of disregard for the safety of his school, even if he does think that they're just, their only motive is to kill him. What's going to stop the Death Eaters from killing a couple students along the way if they get?
It's clear in the book though. He does talk about that, at least in the book, and to the extent that he does make sure that he knows that Snape has the power to say to the Death Eaters due to his position with Voldemort. Is that he can say to that he can actually order the Death Eaters not to touch anyone else. Remember? And so it didn't work in the book, but in the movie it did. So, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't touch anyone else. They just touched Dumbledore.
Yeah, they have plenty of time for that in Deathly Hallows. I mean, didn't Voldemort, in Deathly Hallows, he said that, he didn't want to harm magical blood? I mean, sure, there are half-bloods and, mudbloods at the school, but how do they really know which one is? There's plenty of time for that. They're gonna, take over the school.
Well, it's just the fact that they let them just stroll in, kill Dumbledore, and leave without putting up, I mean, other than Harry chasing after Snape, without putting up any sort of fight. Like, the teachers, at least McGonagall seems to show, realizes something is up, she tells them to run off for their dorms. Are we really supposed to believe that the teachers aren't going to at least put up some resistance, that they just killed the headmaster? I mean, they don't know that,
That is a good point, but that was my point about them not shooting spells at them on the way out. The fact that they were in there the teachers wouldn't have known. They wouldn't have understood how.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't have figured them to be.
Right, they wouldn't have known why, but if they come across Death Eaters, I mean, they're just going to stand there and let them.
Maybe the Death Eaters are using secret passageway in the castle, which is why they're coming out of the Great Hall anyway, right? They're using
coming out of the Great Hall because it's just for safety.
Passageway.
It's just to show them going through the castle in a triumphant way.
They're using some kind of shortcut, so the teachers won't see them or anything. They're using these secret.
That's a good point.
Pathways that Snape would know about because he's a teacher.
Because in the Order of Phoenix Canon, the only door. In the Order of the Phoenix, the only door behind the staff table goes to the trophy room, and that goes to nowhere.
Well, we're already in 20. Basically, we finished 27. I just didn't actually say chapter 28.
Yeah.
In case we're all confused, we're just at chapter 28, Flight of the Prince. And this is kind of a confusing comment because way back when Lord John Paul Castriani, I don't know where that was said or whatever, but he plays Yaxley, I guess, one of the Death Eaters. Has confirmed the invasion of Hogwarts. He said, "I am involved in the invasion of Hogwarts, not so much an invasion, more of a skirmish, which several Death Eaters attempt to infiltrate Hogwarts and find Dumbledore." I find it a bit confusing because I haven't even seen this Lord John Paul in any of the three or four shots that he should be in the trailer.
Why does he call himself a lord? I don't understand.
Because he got...
That's his title.
Yeah, he got...
Because he wants to become the next Dark Lord.
that's it. That's probably it.
Have been cast. I haven't seen him.
My God, he's a real Death Eater, man. This guy...
the second trailer released in... Huh? Well, he's pretty recognizable. He's like a little guy, so... He's also younger. The second trailer released in October shows Snape leading the Death Eaters through the Great Hall, which is what Aaron was just mentioning earlier, the door open.
Oh, the Darth Vader shot.
Can I just say something about that, though? There's a lot of times in movies where they show things that are not quite possible. Like the way that they're moving through the Great Hall is not, it wouldn't make sense because they're leaving instead of, there's nowhere to come from. But like in the movie Harry Met Sally, they're showing Harry and Sally like driving down Lakeshore Drive towards downtown when actually they're coming from the opposite way. And so like it doesn't make any sense, but I don't think that's what the point was. It's
for dramatic effect, yeah.
Yeah, it's just to show them moving through the castle through familiar grounds that we're used to seeing. And nothing more. Like, I don't think that there's not supposed to be any logic to it.
Well, you could kind of, like, fix it in that we don't know where the trophy room leads to. Like, it could be, like, another little passageway coming out of the trophy room. So, like, that leads right into the trophy room. And then you go through the trophy room, up to the door, and there's the Great Hall. I don't know. Like, what I mean is that you could just, you could just like kind of like twist it up so it doesn't make sense if you wanted to.
It's a wing. If you look at it from the outside though, it's like a wing, isn't it? It's like it's winged off. Like there shouldn't be anything there, but like it doesn't really matter.
Kind of
really
dark
don't.
Though. Like the trophy room in the
Argobin
is pretty dark. So, they could have another room over.
I don't think it was meant to have any logic. I don't think they actually mapped it out.
No.
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe just the...
I don't think so. I'm just saying that we could...
Teachers and everyone, I guess maybe they're just too intimidated. They just go and hide in the corner as they let them walk out of the castle. I don't know.
No, Scott. Let me just explain that.
There's a picture of Bellatrix here. She's like running across the tables ecstatically. She looks absolutely crazy. Test screen viewers just tried the picture. She's running along the table right after Dumbledore is killed.
Yep.
Greyback will attack Harry. Most likely the attack will happen here as in the book.
Look at those heels on her shoes.
Sure about that because the battle's been cut, so I don't think he actually tackles Harry maybe now.
Oh, yeah, because that quote, I think, refers to the Burrow attack, and we've never changed that.
But it really doesn't seem to fit because.
Yeah.
Unless he's just.
It could or.
Like, figure of speech or whatever, but.
Anyway,
it's hard to say. It happens somewhere. It appears that Hagrid's hut will be burned. Actually, it is burned because we've seen pictures of it. A set report said that, though, originally first. And she said it had been burned, even saw Hagrid's pumpkin patch, though there were no pumpkins. They filmed it burning with a load of cameras. I forget how many they said because they only got one chance to film it burn. A lot of the outdoor sets have camouflage nets around them. This is because the neighbors complained the light was reflecting off them and that they were ugly. There was a picture of Bellatrix and showed Hagrid's hut burning in the background. And more pictures, screen caps from the second and third trailer show Hagrid's hut on fire with Bellatrix doing a little dance as she's burning it.
It's kind of surprising that it's kind of surprising they kept this when Hagrid's not in it.
Or Fang.
Yeah, we've heard that Hagrid's not in the scene or Fang. Yeah.
Is Fang in the movie at all, Rachel?
I actually find the most interesting thing that it's...
Yeah, he is. The dog. I mean, the dog. Is he in the movie?
Oh, the dog? I don't remember. Yeah.
It is magical fire, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a wood hut, so I don't know how it catches on fire.
Fire that could burn through stone. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's magical fire.
Yep, it's magic. That's always the answer in these movies.
So, the battle, it's been downsized according to test screen viewers. Actually, not downsized, just completely omitted. There's no battle in Hogwarts like in the books. Bellatrix and the others run through Hogwarts triumphantly, destroying a bit of the castle in a euphoric tantrum along the way, and then Hagrid's house is set on fire, but no one but Harry takes any action, and there is only... and that is only on Snape.
It's your words, Scott, not his.
Snape blocks all of Harry's curses. Huh? No, I'm reading the quote here.
They really said that?
I was reading the quote. Trailer screenshots show Harry during the flight of the prince sequence. Looks like he's running through a forest with a bunch of trees, tall trees.
Yeah.
A forest with a...
I suppose.
And
I suppose
he yelled
the thin forest.
Yeah, that looks like what that is.
Because they have it ahead in every movie.
And then what was it? He yelled in the trailer.
Fight back, you coward! Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he calls him a coward, I guess. I guess it's in there. Yeah.
But there's no
description about the scene.
A test screening attendee confirms the reveal of the Half-Blood Prince. Many of you asked what Harry's reaction to Snape's revelation that he is the Half-Blood Prince. To be honest, it was hard to describe because he was lying on the ground besides being hit with counter curses from Snape. Bellatrix at one point runs up and curses him too, though I'm unclear what spell she tried to use on him. Much of the spell casting throughout the movie was done without words, and I'm guessing, or rather hoping, this is because voiceovers were just not added yet, but who knows. Snape yells at her, saying Potter belongs to the Dark Lord, and she leaves. That's when Snape approaches Harry, who is on the ground, whimpering and enraged. He says the line, "You may have your mother's eyes, but you are as dim as your father." That is when he reveals he is the Half-Blood Prince, then he leves. I was disappointed that we didn't see the "Don't call me coward" line. Yeah. I was waiting for it, but I wasn't disappointed with the scene overall. He doesn't scream like in the books. Alan Rickman's Snape has always been a lot more controlled than Joe Rowling's Snape, though. He is perfectly in character as what I think of as movie Snape. Very dangerous, but no overabundance of anger.
Wait.
Oh, I was just going to ask Rachel. So, I guess you said most of the spells were not actually heard, but did Harry try casting Snape's own spells at him, or any unforgettables like Semprah and all that, but there wasn't the dialogue.
I think he did. I don't remember for sure though, but I actually think he did. I think we do hear him try Septim Semprah.
But
a lot of the spells were just like not inaudible. Like they were wordless. What do they call them?
Nonverbal.
Nonverbal spells, yeah.
But there probably wasn't that response from Snape that said, "No unforgivable spells from you," or whatever. Or, "How dare you use my own spells against me," or whatever. And then I thought those were great lines, but it wouldn't have made much sense, especially if they didn't introduce nonverbal spells actually in the movie. Like, they just used them without really talking about them.
And how sad is that? I was so hoping for the line, during the nonverbal spells where he goes, he goes, I said to call me sir, there's no need to call me sir, professor.
Yeah, that's probably my biggest disappointment, is that they don't have a Defense Against the Darkness classroom scene.
Oh, I missed the whole scene with Dumbledore at the Dursleys. I loved that scene in the book. That was a big advantage.
They could have used either of them, or they could have combined it into one scene, because it was too book. But I guess we're just a...
Yeah.
So, that Rachel discuss this scene more on the interview. Go back to episode 5 or whatever, if you want to hear that.
Only on episode 5, Prince Watch.
3.
Was it 3? 3, 4, or 5, one of those.
That was
3, 4, and 5.
Was 3, because that's...
Be sure to download those episodes, too.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. It was transcribed. Okay, so... Producer David Heyman, last thing in this chapter, producer David Heyman was interviewed about the film. One of the questions concerning the omissions at the end of the film. As you know, Half-Blood Prince screenings were recently held in Chicago, which has given fans an idea of what to expect come July 2009. Many were shocked to see the omission of the Battle at Hogwarts and Dumbledore's funeral. Can you explain why these scenes were left out? David Heyman responds, "The reason we left out the Battle at Hogwarts is because we have a Battle at Hogwarts in the 7th film, and we are avoiding repetition. Dumbledore's funeral is something that I really loved and is a fantastic part of the book, and part of me would have loved it in the film. But we decided that while we loved it, that what we came up with was the right ending for the film that we had made."
We disagree with that.
And I guess we're going to discuss that in depth.
Yep.
Personally,
yeah, no,
wait.
An excuse.
Oh, are you going to say, Rich?
Shush.
Oh, I think the reason why he actually left it out was because, well, first of all, the money that they'd have to pay all the actors to come in for it, because there's a lot of actors in that scene that were
funeral,
not
in it. I don't have a problem with funeral being left out, actually. It wouldn't make much sense.
It's going to be at the beginning of Deathly Hallows.
It would have been great.
Yeah.
It would have been a very expensive scene to film. If they're
going to leave it out,
wait,
of Half-Blood Prince, leave it entirely.
You know it was next episode. Shh. Okay. Can we move on to the next discussion?
Anyway, yeah.
Let's go kill Dumbledore now.
The repetition thing is bullshit. I think it's just that they didn't want to spend the money for the action sequence, and couldn't figure out how to script it properly.
Yeah,
because it is a different part of the book to figure
out. Yeah, I guess so.
Because you can't do it with flashbacks.
And that's it for the list.
We've already discussed.
That's it for the list.
That's it for the...
Moving on.
Points, which I'm not allowed to participate in.
But you do anyway.
So now we have we're continuing with the discussion sequence. The climax, we are...
I'll do the questions.
List of questions
here, Scott. Now we're going to have a discussion segment. And this episode, we're going to be discussing the climax in general to tie in with the list chapters. And the first question is, which we will discuss, do you think the succession of the cave scene, the tower scene, and the flight of the prince have the potential to make the climax of Half-Blood Prince the most powerful and unique ending of the series yet? Do you think it will feel like a non-stop roller coaster ride?
Better.
Yeah.
Scott?
I think it's going to be unique.
Yeah, it will be until Deathly Hallows. It's going to be slightly diminished because they cut the battle, but it's still going to be... the cave scene should be amazing.
Yeah.
There really hasn't been, like, a huge climax in any of the movies up to this point.
Yeah, and this is the first time we have...
Would have been, but they split that up as well, so...
Yeah, this is the first time they actually have a string of climaxes, one right after the other. You know, like it, It's gonna like blow us away.
I don't know why you say the real climax of Half-Blood Prince is. I guess
I would say the tower.
Yeah.
Isn't that a question?
Later? Yeah. I'll save that for later.
So.
Oh yeah, this one. Second question: which climax do you think needs to feel the most climactic? The cave, the tower, or the flight of the prince?
I say the tower.
Yeah.
Cave.
Hopefully, considering the whole series as a whole, the tower, but the book as a whole, maybe the cave.
The tower, but it's going to be hard because the readers are already, I mean, a lot of people have already read the book and know what happens.
So yeah, but
we'll be spoiled.
I think to make that part really climactic, I mean, if they could do that for the non-book readers, it would be really cool.
I think that the cave will be like the big epic part of the film, though. I mean, for those who haven't read the books, they'll be thinking, whoa, this is the big climax. And then right after that, we go straight to the tower and Flight of the Prince, which I'm not expecting to be as epic. I'm wanting more of an emotional chase, you know, with an emotional, I guess, climax. And not so much an action.
Yeah, this is going to like shock those people, because I mean, they're not gonna like, they're going to a cave and have like, the dead rising up from the water, you know, like it's gonna be like, wow, this is, like it's gonna be like, something that they're just, I'm not expecting, you know, from a Potter movie. It's gonna be like, what? Wow. And it's, you know, if they're not, spoiled, obviously.
And then they'll go straight to the tower. And you'll think it's over at that point, and then that's really when the story begins.
But at the same time, though, you don't want them to feel too, like, blown away that they can't, you know, that they're so, like, drained by that point in the movie that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, good point.
You gotta spread around the, you know, they gotta spread it around a little bit. You can't have one of the scenes be more powerful than the other, then they'll just like cancel each other out, if you know what I mean.
The third question, and it's actually four because I omitted three.
Okay. Oh, you
question
did?
Three. Oh. Yeah, because we've already discussed that in the list.
Okay.
Three. How long should the entire climax be? How many minutes would you attribute to each scene?
That's a Scott question.
Yeah, because I've timed like a lot of scenes in these movies.
Yeah. He's a genius.
So who's going first?
The entire climax be probably about 20 or 25 minutes. The previous movies, first one was 18 minutes, second one was 14 minutes. Prisoner of Azkaban was 8 for the Freaking Shack and 17 for the Time Turner sequence. That was really long. That was like
really
25
like
minutes.
An hour.
No, I'm talking just the. What, an hour? No.
Oh, like the third act feels like an hour.
Oh, yeah. I'm not talking about the third act. And then Goblet of Fire was like 11 minutes for the whole graveyard scene, and Order of the Phoenix was 15 for Beyond the Veil and Only One He Ever Feared. So, I mean, I think with the cave, which probably should be about 10 minutes or so, which what Rachel said, or maybe 15 minutes, and then like 5 minutes for the tower scene, and I would have said like 5 or 10 minutes for the Flight of the Prince, but that's been cut down a bit. So I think it's like 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It should be a good long sequence. Events.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
what's the next question?
Next question.
How important do you think the editing needs to be to ensure each climax follows naturally into the other?
Really?
Do you think they should chop it like Mark Taylor's?
No. Please no. Please no, don't do that. I dread that. I have nightmares about that. Please, I don't want it to be choppy like that. It's got to flow into the other.
Nice. My Prisoner of Azkaban would be great.
I guess you could say that.
That kind of editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
Wait. I'll let Britt talk.
Thank you. I think that, like, it flowed so well in the book that if they just kind of keep, like, it's part of a script thing as well, but if they keep just that pace up, it'll just, like, roll into one. Like, the way Joe has it written, everything just, like, rolls together really, really nicely, and they need to, they always need to kind of obey the book, but with that, especially as far as editing goes, it needs to roll together like that.
But the ending of the fifth book was the same way, and then they, they managed to butcher that up. So, yeah, that's why I'm...
How did you manage that? And I don't know what to know, because that scared me.
I think that that Mark Day has improved as an editor, though, since then.
I've heard. If they had tried to do the battle, the editing would have been hard because they would have either, not doing it as flashback, if they tried to do it real time, they would have had to either, like, cut away from the cave scene, which would have been terrible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Cut away from, like, the Draco-Dumbledore conversation to show the battling going on down below.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
I'm not sure how that would have worked. So it might be better to not have it, but, yeah, the editing needs to be well done for...
Yeah, and also if you had the... if you had the battle in there, you would go from the cave at the tower to the battle.
Yeah, because like it started.
To the fight of the prince, it'll be overkill. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can't have.
It's kind of all going on at the same time. Like,
you can't have that many endings. You know what I mean?
A few minutes before Dumbledore and Harry got back, and then it was going on the whole time that he was like talking with Draco.
Yeah, but I still think they could have done, like, showing people, like, fighting after them as they left the school. It doesn't have to be
like
a huge battle.
Large scale in the book.
I don't know.
You something I thought
of. You see, you know, they could run after the Death Eaters. Go fight, but if they, you know, when they go out and they see Dumbledore's dead body, aren't they going to be more concerned about their headmaster who just fell off a tower? I mean,
yeah, but he fell off the tower to the outside.
It probably depends on the person's personality. Some people are going to be really pissed and enraged at that point and want to get revenge, and others are going to be like really emotional.
These are kids, though.
Yeah, but they don't know yet. Dumbledore is dead outside the building.
Personality, I would see her just like wanting to whoop some ass at that point.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that.
Yeah,
she's not aware of what's going on. All right.
They just know that intruders are in the building. They don't know that anyone's dead, other than the Dark Mark being there. They don't know who it is.
Okay.
Question 5.
Next question.
Oh, 6.
Yeah. It's different. Do you think that the adaption of Snape indicating for Harry to be quiet will improve the scene for this film?
It did.
Rachel, don't ruin our discussion.
You wicked, wicked lady.
It ruined it. It was terrible.
My gosh, you saw the movie.
What movie?
The movie.
I didn't see no movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna say I think it does.
Anyway.
Yeah, I say I think it does. What does other people say?
I say yeah, I think it does too. Dylan?
What?
Your turn.
What's he gonna say?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I said we were. Yeah, I think the Snape indicating to Harry to be quiet is really adds to the betrayal that Harry feels towards it. And it just, you know, they could have not done that, and it would stick, you know, Harry would still be angry, but it just adds a little more depth to it when the fact that he chose that one moment to trust him and then Snape betrayed him. Just adds a little more to it.
I think Harry's already got trust issues, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, I think it'll probably add to it, because it'll make Harry... It'll make the audience and Harry think that he's a good guy right at that moment, right before he goes and betrays everyone.
Yeah, it makes the shock more surprising.
It'll make you think that he's there to help, like he did, at least how I thought in the book. I was like, oh, yes, you know, Snape's here to save the day, and then it's like...
Yeah.
Well, he did, and he trusted he... I'm sorry, I know I'm not allowed to speak.
Oh, right.
He trusted... That was Harry's last time to trust Snape, and he did. He was trusting Snape to go help, you know what I mean?
That's great.
And so it shows that despite all of the mistrust, in the end, Harry decided to trust Dumbledore, who trusted Snape. And he was betrayed, actually, on both accounts, you know, for that.
Irony, you know?
I'm not sure if there's enough in the film, because they cut that dialogue in The Spinner's End, that shows that Snape is possibly a bad guy, but that might be a good thing to make us think that he's good all the way along and then have him betray us.
Well, we do see the vow, though, so...
Right.
Some people...
Some
people may know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I got the impression from the TV screening that Snape was portrayed as bad in Spinner's End.
Yeah.
Really?
That's what they said.
Bellatrix questioning Snape at Spinner's End, supposedly.
Does anybody know if Dumbledore tells Harry to go get Snape in the film?
Yeah,
he does. Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
He says, don't get Madame Pomfrey, get Snape. Yeah.
He trusts Snape.
Except that Harry, he doesn't like, no, not Snape, please not Snape. He does not say that in the movie, right? He just says, okay. Like he doesn't say, no, please, not Snape, sir, not Snape.
I don't know, I think it's probably good to have us think that he's good the whole movie and then have him betray us and then have it be flipped around again in Deathly Hallows.
We don't think that he's necessarily good the whole movie anyway, because he's talking to Draco, and Harry thinks that Draco, you know, that Snape is in with it, you know? He doesn't necessarily think, but we do, because the Snape that we know seems to be good. Sorry.
That's good. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, it should be a little bit ambiguous, but yeah, maybe it's good to cut some of the stuff that makes you think he leans more towards the dark side.
Well, we think that he's good. Then he kills you know who, and then he's bad.
Yeah.
All through Deathly Hallows. Then at the end of part two, boom, he's a good guy all along. Yeah, that's going to work, I think. Okay, next question.
Yeah.
Question number 6. What are you going to do if you have to go to the bathroom really badly first into the cave?
That's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
I got a strong bladder.
I think I'll piss my pants and stay there. I'll just
yeah, if I really had to.
It's worth it. It's worth it for me. I mean, I've been waiting for this movie for so long. I mean, so what? I have a wet pants. I don't care. You know what I mean? I mean, I've been waiting so damn long. Who cares if my pants are wet?
Everybody else in the theater can smell it.
But it's the end of the movie, so like, yeah, it's almost over.
I think it depends. Like, if I went with my friends or something, I don't know. Or there's nobody around me that knew me.
Is your friend there? That'd be embarrassing. Or you take it.
Anyway.
Or if you gotta take a dump, and
would anybody actually leave? How about this? Would anybody actually leave?
No. Back when I saw Order of the Phoenix, actually right when the film started, like 5 minutes in, I had to go use the restroom.
Hold
it all the way through.
Oh,
Especially for that movie. I mean, if you miss one second of that movie, you're lost.
When I saw the second movie, I actually hadn't read the books yet, so I was, you know, watching for the first time, and I had to pee so bad during them.
That's a long movie, too.
And my, sister, yeah.
Well, if people are smart, they won't get a drink.
I'm not getting a drink. But
all the people they get a pop or whatever to drink.
No, but we used to go after the first two movies were after Thanksgiving. We're doing Thanksgiving, and so we would go to Thanksgiving. We used to go to the Ritz for Thanksgiving dinner, and then we would go afterwards to the movie and see it. And so like we had just like sat through an entire Thanksgiving dinner, and like there's no way like you would make it through the movie without having to pee at some point. And so But like my sister, I asked my sister, when can I go? And she's like, just wait. And she made me go during a spider scene because I know you'll hate this scene, so go.
Aragog, how did you miss Aragog?
I've noticed with movies before.
That's Aragog's scene, the first scene in the whole movie.
Like clockwork, it's like 2 hours and I have to go. So if the movie's longer than 2 hours and I started drinking my Mountain Dew at the beginning of the movie, then I'm screwed.
I brought a bottle of water with me just in case, but I did not drink a single thing when I saw the Half-Blood Prince, because I knew that I'd have to pee if I did, and I would so regret it. And I actually went to pee like after we were already in the theaters, and like we were waiting for it to start. We waited like 2 hours to see that movie. So like after about an hour and a half, I was just like, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. I so hope it doesn't start while I'm in there.
Oh God.
It was worth the wait, and they ended up waiting for me. So I could tell it wasn't time yet though, because the VIP seats weren't taken yet, and that's why I went. So I had a feeling that we had long enough to wait. Little did I know who was sitting in those VIP seats, but
Maybe the fans need to bring some incontinence breaks.
What if you bring bottles of liquor into the, and you're drinking a bottle of whiskey during the movie?
I don't want to be doing that.
Drunk while watching.
What?
That would be terrible.
Questions.
Oh,
next
and
question.
Get drunk on the slughorn and.
Oh yes, you can actually feel the effect of the scene.
That would be bringing weed
and And then when you piss, you're gonna feel the wetness of Harry falling into the water. You could actually live the movie.
Judging upon what we've seen and heard thus far, what do you think the climax in the film would do justice to the final chapters in the book?
I think so. It seems like it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I think so. Thank Alan Horn, or not.
What should be the dominating feeling of the ending overall? Dread, fright, loss, excitement, tragedy, failure, or coming of age?
All of the above.
That's toughy.
If you piss your pants,
yeah.
I don't think the ending would be failure.
Tragedy, fright, and dread. I mean, loss. Yeah, definitely loss.
I think it should be, let me think. This is important, actually, because the feeling that you leave the film on is actually going to shape the entire film experience. So this is actually a really important question. I think it should be loss, yeah, but also a curiosity. You know what I mean? Like you got to keep the audience's interest for the next film too, you know what I mean, in a way. But yeah, I think loss, a sense of loss, a sense of growing up, you know, of coming of age, that kind of thing. I think that all goes together nicely, I think.
Nine. If you did bring a date to Half-Blood Prince, at which point in the ending do you think you'd have to hold your partner's hand?
My brother, I
would
not go to that.
Are any of us gonna manage to get dates to this movie? I mean, really?
No, probably not.
No.
I would go to my pants. I would just leave it.
His hand?
Oh, come on. It's serious.
But if I was to take this question seriously, I'd probably say infuriates.
Yeah, vampiring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say the second, December of it. But that's going to be toned down. So. Probably
on the ending.
Possibly the.
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't know. Maybe the cursed if the cursed necklace theme. That sounds toned down a bit too. But no, I said the angry.
That's not the climax.
The case.
If you're not holding your partner's hand by the time you start the movie, then you're probably not having a very good relationship.
I try to keep it PG. But if you want to go further,
I just said that if you're not holding their hand by the time you're moving, then you're probably, then you probably don't have a very good relationship. So it's
then you probably shouldn't be going to movies with them anyway.
I think the
better question here would have been, at what point
do you hold the person?
Is she going to be jumping on you or clinging to you because she's scared?
Well, when the Inferi grabs Harry's hand in the cave.
At what point is she going to be holding on for dear life?
That's the money moment. That's the money moment, guys, okay? Remember that. You're taking a date.
Question 10. Which part of the ending do you think will shock non-book readers the most? Will there be a collective gasp in the theatre when Snape goes to Voldemort? Snape goes to Voldemort.
Snape what? Goes to Dumbledore. Snape kills Voldemort.
Will it be along the lines of I Am Your Father from Empire Strikes Back for general audiences who do not follow the books? Who only follow the books?
I think it'll probably be when Snape kills Dumbledore, unless they've already been spoiled on that.
I hope they don't.
But, other than that, maybe, something in having to do with the Inferi.
No, I don't think that'll be the biggest surprise. I think it's going to be Dumbledore, honestly. I think it does have the potential to be, I Am Your Father, but not that intense, I don't think, because really, it depends on how invested the people are in the films and the universe, and in the characters. But yeah, I think that would be the best, the most shocking of all them. Now there are many, many surprises in this film. I think
definitely
be the biggest.
Anyways, I think if it was an original film that wasn't based on a book, it could be along the lines of I Am Your Father, but...
Yes, number 11. How do you want Dumbledore to die? And this time, right, shush again. Blown back off the tower into an open arms pose before he falls, like in the book? Would you like the camera to follow him down? Would you want a far wide shot of Dumbledore falling off the tower? If not, how we frame the shot.
I guess falling all the way off, but I don't think they're going to show him fall all the way down.
Yeah, that would be
I don't
really
know if I'll see him fall over the edge and then cut to the Death Eaters casting the dark mark and then running away or whatever. Well, it looks like the Death Eaters look down over the edge.
I kind of see him dying like the camera coming from we see him fall from the outside of the tower, and we follow him down or something like that. I don't know. Some wide shot of him falling. That's what I see.
I think they should have made him fall onto that stake, that Neville got caught on, in the first movie.
Oh, God.
Oh. So that he doesn't actually
What
die.
About the pose?
Or that he gets impaled by it. Is that what you mean?
Oh, God.
Page?
God, you really hate that guy.
I accept that I would.
Oh, okay. I thought at first you were saying so that he doesn't actually die. I was going to say that would just perpetuate the beliefs from books where nobody thought Snape or Dumbledore was dead.
Now, what about his pose of Dumbledore? Like when he's blasted off. Do you think it should be like a Jesus Christ kind of pose there? When he's blasted off? Or
it has to be a Jesus
pulling
Christ
off.
Pose?
Just
well, you know what I mean, open arms.
Oh, I guess. I don't know.
What are you saying,
Aaron? Ragdoll, basically. Like, how, it's just, he just goes down wherever he falls down. His arms,
I think that he needs to get hit, just fall backwards and flip over the wall. Instead
flip
of
over,
blasted.
I think that would look good.
Well, do, like, somersaults?
No, like, fall back over the wall. I mean, instead of getting, like, blasted up, like, in the book, which, like, that's not how the spell should really act, I don't think.
I think it's going to be, like, in, I think it should be slightly in slow motion.
A lot of people thought that he wasn't dead because of the way that the spell acted, so I think the movie should fix that and just have him...
Yeah, oh, definitely.
...back over, instead of getting, like, blasted up in the air like every other spell that just, you know, just makes him fly backwards.
There's gotta be no doubt that he's dead, you know, and
right. It should be like with Sirius, kind of, because I think he just kind of fell backwards, but without a veil, obviously, like, instead of falling back over the ramparts or the railing or whatever.
But in Goblet of Fire, Cedric did kind of fly.
Yeah, he
backwards,
did.
So it's not in the movie. Well, the movie.
So yeah, in but movie. Canon,
guess what? Though, guess what? He's a vampire. Cedric is a vampire.
Oh yeah.
No. Anyway, go on. Go ahead.
How will the Colossal Prince reveal? Will the audience understand the print, that Prince is Snape's mother's maiden name?
This is probably a question.
I'm
going to
go
with
him.
I doubt it. This is a question for Rachel. Did they? Was that revealed at all that it was Snape's mother's maiden name?
No.
I doubt it.
No. It wasn't.
Yeah, see, I got a problem with that.
Not really necessary.
How could you not explain the title? It's going to be so confusing.
Well, actually.
Yeah, but people are going to be like, wait, hold on, he's a prince, he's a real prince, wow, how's that got to do anything?
Or
you know
they'll
what I mean?
Think it's just some cool name more... that he picked.
Yeah, but... No, but...
They'll just make it seem like Snape's a narcissist.
Yeah, but
yeah,
like...
Yeah, really it'll... arrogant.
Yeah, but people aren't going to catch that. They're going to think that he's a real prince, they're going to be confused, they're going to be asking questions, they're going to think that's like a big deal.
But,
maybe he just called himself that, you know?
But I mean, if it's going to be the title of the movie, it's going to be like a major talking point.
They're saving that particular reveal for, Deathly Hallows 2 with the memory.
Yeah, that could be, but I don't see where that would fit, though. I mean, there's already so much that they have to get across.
They just omit, like they did with the Marauders explanation in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, but see, this is the
like,
title.
It's kind of irrelevant, but it would be nice if they did explain the title book.
just like a little, like, what?
Yeah,
what
there's just a couple lines from
yeah, just like a passing, a little reference, you know, like, it doesn't need to be like...
But then again, like, why do they not show, you know, a 5-second shot of the Diadem? It's the same sort of thing.
Exactly,
just...
They're just...
It's like, why don't they just
do
it? It's so easy, you know?
I know, it's not like it would take a whole lot of time or whatever, it's just...
It's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, well.
And they didn't get over it.
Yeah. It's just that, I don't know how I'm going to... My mom's not going to be so confused, but whatever.
Yeah.
I think that was a repeat question, that one. Oh, yeah, the repetition, basically. Yeah, we've already done that one. Yeah.
Oh.
Next question is, how successful do you think the cliffhanger ending will be to bring audiences back for Deathly Hallows Part 1?
It better...
I'm not so sure, because they've kind of downplayed the Horcruxes, it sounds like. Kind of pushed them to the back burner a bit. I mean, it seems like... You know, we're going to be lucky if the people that haven't read the book even understand what the hell a Horcrux is.
The biggest cliffhanger was that...
X-Rage.
Isn't it called Dumbledore?
Right.
How could you confuse him with Voldemort? You evil... That's blasphemy. Dumbledore.
I think the real cliffhanger, though, was that Harry has this task ahead of him to find all these Horcruxes. I mean, that's what the Deathly Hallows hinged on, was in order to, for the demise of Voldemort, was destroying all the Horcruxes.
Well, at least it got that in there. At least.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to add that the delay does help, because at the end of the movie there's going to be all these cliffhangers, and they're going to be saying, come back in 1.5 years, not come back in 2 years. And since Horcrux has probably the most cliffhangers of the whole series,
That's one of the places where the delay has actually helped, I think, in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, of any of the books, Half-Blood Prince probably has the biggest, like, cliffhanger ending.
Yeah, definitely.
The other books kind of have resolution a little bit. I mean, not completely, but, like, you know, you've got the killing of the Basculus and everything, and the destroying of the stone in the first one. Those are kind of resolutions.
Yeah, they're separate stories, resolute, but the main one doesn't. And Half-Blood Prince doesn't really have a separate story.
Order of the Phoenix is kind of a cliffhanger a bit too, like, with the reveal of the prophecy, and so then it's like kind of an oh shit moment. But like, because now he knows, like, you know, well, one of us must die, sort of thing. It's just like kind of this feeling of doom. But really, like, Half-Blood Prince is where it's just, it just gets, like, it seems like it's getting worse. Like, you know, this task is going to be impossible. Like, there is 5 more Horcruxes to destroy before I can even have a chance to finish this guy off.
Yeah, I think that these last... I think that these last 3 films are going to feel like a trilogy. Because, I mean, you got a year.
Dumbledore dead, you should feel like, you know, he just lost his mentor. Like, how is he going to do...
Yeah, that's it. Because, you see, now you're going to have one film a year now. You're going to have one film in 2009, one film 2010, one film 2011.
I mean, the book really ended on a tone of doom. I mean, Dumbledore's dead. Harry's got this huge task ahead of him that he's... Well, with the help of his friends, but... It's really quite a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah.
Hopefully they won't
have
lost too much interest in the year and a half or so of the movie, because, you know, the books aren't propelling the enthusiasm in the series or whatever.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Last question.
The last question, we're almost there. Will the ending make you cry? If so, at which point do you think you will let loose? I'll go first. Goblet of Fire was the only movie... Actually, Philosopher's Stone now makes me kind of get tears in my eyes too now.
Me too, actually. They're in the Mirror of Erised.
Yeah, that scene. Cedric's death, when they came back, that's makes me cry. But Sirius's death doesn't.
Cedric does always
make
me
cry. Yeah.
I really doesn't. I really doubt I'm gonna die for Dumbledore's or cry for Dumbledore's death.
I don't think I even cried in the book when Dumbledore died. I cried more.
What? I cried in the book.
I think I cried more at the funeral.
Honestly, I might be a little more overjoyed that I think Gambit is dead. I mean,
me too! Sorry.
Like, wait, can I just finish up what I was saying? Because I was going to say that the fact that I didn't die for Sirius might have been because there was no
scene. Die for Sirius?
I didn't cry. There was no scene at the end where Harry's like with his body or anything, but in Goblet of Fire there was, so I'm thinking I might cry at the scene where they raise their wands around the body. That's what I'm thinking.
If Harry's reaction scene is really good, because he's supposed to be like crying on Ginny's shoulder or whatever, which is kind of funny, because, like, well, Ginny doesn't cry, I guess. That's not her character. So that's good that it's not like that. But if he does that scene, if he acts that really well, then maybe. Because what I cried at Goblet of Fire with Cedric's death. That's the only... I've only cried at, like, three movies, and the other one was A Walk to Remember and Marley and Me, but if that... What made that scene was Cedric's dad's reaction.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That was, and, like...
Yeah, that was really well done. I didn't even like the movie, but it was really well done, yeah.
I think and I hope that I'll cry over it. I am not worried, Harry. I am with you. I hope I cry over that, because that's, like, one of the most emotional moments for me in the entire series.
Bawling.
It's kind of funny, actually, when I read a description of that scene where they gather around Dumbledore's body, I actually kind of teared up when reading that, and I've never really done that over anything, you know, anything else. So, I don't know, with put in some, you know, a great score in there, and I'll, you know, probably cry a little.
Yeah,
oh.
I...
Oh, yeah, the score is really nice. Okay.
Hmm.
I wanted him. Yeah, so I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no.
Alright, so I think that's... Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much, everybody, for participating. Thank you, Rach. Thank you, Britt. Thank you, Scott. Thank
forget
you, Dylan.
To, don't forget to wear your incontinence briefs to Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah. Yep. Don't forget. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
All right.
That was fun. Most people vomit the first time.
Smile. It's only 5 months and 16 days.
What have I started?
Aaron, you go
ahead. I have to edit this madness.
And I might just wait a while. Don't want to spoil my mother who's right outside.
Is the Dursley?
Is the Dursley there? Ah!
But yeah, I mean... Half-Blood Prince just in general should be obvious, like,
quickly,
yeah.
Hide under the cover.
Creepy,
and...
romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
What?
Okay, question number 10.
About
question number 10.
As a date in general.
Question number 10. Question number 10.
What if you get date raped?
Which part of...
Alright.
Question
let Aaron talk!
You mean 11, right? Because you said 10, and that's...
No.
Question number 10.
I am sorry.
Question number 10.
Question number 10.
Question number 10.
Let's go.
All right, go, Aaron.
Question number 10.
Oh,
God. Question number 10. Question number 10.
Get on with
it. 10. You're going to say it 10 times?
You're a broken record. Which part of the ending do you think will shock book readers the most?
I'll let the Kiwi say it. He's racist American. Let the Kiwi say it. Alright, go. Guys, are you there?
Yeah.
It's enough of this. I only made a little stupid joke. And I'm sorry that I did.
I rarely cry at movies, but I've also kind of become more emotional, I guess, probably in the last couple of years. So, who knows, maybe.
You're a wimp. I'm just kidding. Wait. It's almost over. The recording's almost over.
3.5 hours.
Why so serious?
Why so serious?
Black.
Because I haven't seen the Dark Knight yet.
Let's put a smile on that face, Darren.
Smile. No,
where are we?
Number 9. If you,
what should
wait,
be
number 9.
Wait,
oh, number
wait. I gotta do a new recording.
Okay. So that was it for the list. Ding, 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 ding. Anyway. So now we're gonna... Now we're gonna have... Shush!
But then we still got Endurum and Deathly Hallows for the scenes.
And now... We have a special performance from Rachel, the cave scene.
Can I do along?
Jamden ruins the cave scene, part one.
Wait,
this is the music to celebrate. This is the music to celebrate that. Here we go, listen. She stopped.
What? Oh, I have to play?
No, keep going. He ruins it. He ruins it.
Oh, and I can't play now that you're listening.
Golem? What about Golem?
Now, 4.5 hours.
Flying? Oh, I see.
Oh, it's fine. So can we continue?
Scott?
No.
Oh. Yeah. We'll finish up 27 and do 28 next time.
No, Scott. You're not doing it.
No.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Nobody's going to want to listen to this. It's too long.
It's too long.
It's going to be like 3 hours.
Dude, listen.
By the time we
for the last one.
This one, do the next chapter and the questions.
The last one was longer, Scott. I hate to break it to you, but the last episode was longer.
Aaron? No.
Yeah, it was. I swear to God.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half. I was able to do that.
The last one was 3 hours.
This is all fluff right now. We're not going to keep all this stuff.
And how many people listen to it?
Yeah, I don't
Aaron,
know.
Aaron, are you master of knowledge?
Like 100.
That's not very
82.
Many. Oh, is that a lot?
I don't know. I can't really tell.
Guys, but it's not that much, honestly. I don't know why you think it's... I know it feels like we... like it's been a long time.
Well, it's at least
it's not
hours.
Really much. It's not going to be a feel.
We're going to have an amazing title if it's 2 hours.
If not,
this is as long as...
Well, fine, let me resolve this. If it's too long, we'll cut it later. We can just finish recording.
I'm going to be cutting this.
This
is my job right here. You guys have nothing to complain about. I don't know when it's going to be doing all the work tonight.
Okay. Anyway, we're recording this?
Yep. I need something for the outtakes, you know.
Tension on the Prince Watch crew.
Yeah.
Tensions rise as we try to decide what the f*** to do.
Whoa. And we curse, too.
Huh?
My thing,
Are we ready to go? Are we ready to leave the ground here?
I'm ready. Where are we supposed to be?
Are we ready to fly away?
And I don't
fly
know, the prince? List is not loaded.
Why are you wanting the list?
The list is drunk. It's loaded.
No. The Word document, it's such a huge file. It's like...
Really?
That's not my fault. It's not my fault. When I sent you that list, it wasn't nearly as big as that. You guys made it.
No, the Word document that Aaron sent me, it's taken for a book.
And what the f*** was that?
What was that?
Is that a duck? Was that a duck?
I have a pet duck now. Sorry.
Duck! Because I want to be cool. Maybe all the people on IMDb would like me if I curse more.
Because we're going to bleep the entire episode. The entire episode is going to be bleeped.
Yeah, and that's my job too. Whine.
Okay.
Hey, come on, are we going to continue?
Isn't it great being almost 29?
Isn't it great being almost done? Well, not... Alright, come on, are we going to...
I'm still trying to get to the part of the list that we're at.
Is it that hard to click on buttons?
Is that the cave right now? It's scrolling so slowly down this page.
Why don't you go see the movie? Why do you gotta look at the list?
What? Yeah, that's gonna be their title. So many
Hey, Jock, come on, we're wasting time here. Hurry up.
I'm still trying to figure out where the hell are we?
Yeah, too many baseballs to your head.
I'm in Chicago.
We're at
where in
the Obama's home state?
Oh, Obama's home city.
Home city.
I have his home address and phone number. Well, it's not his home address anymore.
Wait a minute, but the city is in the state, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, but I'm but city is more intimate.
Dumbledore cast.
Don't spoil the movie, Brent. What are you, crazy?
Well, we were going to like explore what we're like.
Wow. You're gonna spoil the whole.
What?
See?
Oh my
god! You just ruined this girl's life. Brent, you're no good.
Did they cut that from the test screening?
Bless you, Brent. You ruined the movie.
Okay.
Rebel, represent. Oh God, Scott! I'm only joking. Honestly, Scott, I'm only joking. I cry over Dumbledore's death too.
I feel like crying because we finally got through with this.
I hope. In Deathly Hallows, I cry Bobby's death, but I doubt it will.
And I feel like I feel like bawling because I have a lot of work to do. It's not that long.
This is a song that does.
I think we'll probably do all three chapters whenever.
Okay. Alright, get it.
It's a song.
It will never end.